At the beginning of the 21st century, the Umbrella Corporation had become the largest commercial entity in the United States. 9 out of every 10 homes contain its products. Its political and financial influence is felt everywhere. In public, it is the world's leading supplier of computer technology, medical products, and healthcare. Unknown even to its own employees, its massive profits are generated by military technology, genetic experimentation, and viral weaponry.
Seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
How horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
Mr. President, just a brief comment on my friend, the Republican leader's statement. He continues bad-mouthing the recovery. We are in a recovery
to help the economy. Democrats won't stand for a budget that weakens it.
The Republican leadership has a Tea Party screaming so loudly in its right ear that it can't hear what the vast majority of the country demands. The country demands that we get this done. As I've said before, the biggest gap in these negotiations isn't between Democrats and Republicans. It's between Republicans and Republicans. So the Speaker has a choice to make, and not much time to make it. He can either do what the Tea Party wants or what the country needs.
That's foolishness. We have people that are desperate. They've been out of work for some as much as 2 years. We have reduced the debt by $3 trillion. Let's start helping the middle class. Let's start helping the poor. The rich are getting richer. The poor are getting poorer. The middle class is being squeezed out of existence. They have to figure out some other message than one that doesn't agree with the American people. The American people want unemployment benefits extended. That's it. Let them agree with the American people.
Recovery. We are in
we
recovery.
We are here to have a budget that has revenue coming in, that has investments made into the future. We also want to make decisions in those two areas where growth with jobs are created, because more jobs, more revenue coming in. Nothing brings more money to the Treasury of the United States than investment in education of the American people. So we have to recognize that. Which cuts really help us and which cuts hurt our future? And cuts in education, scientific research, and the rest are harmful, and they are what are affected by the sequestration. So it is almost a false argument to say we have a spending problem. We have a budget deficit problem that we have to address. Right now we have low interest on the national debt, and it's a good time for us to act to lower that deficit. We think the deficit and the national debt are at immoral levels. They must be reduced. We're sick and tired of paying interest on the national debt, and that's 15%.
But I also want to announce my choice for the next chair of the Federal Reserve. One of the nation's foremost economists and policymakers, current vice chairman, Janet Yellen. She is a proven leader, and she's tough, not just because she's from Brooklyn. Janet is exceptionally well qualified for this role. She served in leadership positions at the Fed for more than a decade. As vice chair for the past 3 years, she's been exemplary in a driving force of policies to help boost our economic recovery. You know, Janet is renowned for her good judgment. She sounded the alarm early about the housing bubble, about excesses in the financial sector, and about the risks of a major recession. She doesn't have a crystal ball, but what she does have is a keen understanding about how markets and the economy work, not just in theory, but also in the real world.
I'm honored and humbled by the faith that you've placed in me. If confirmed by the Senate, I pledge to do my utmost to keep that trust and meet the great responsibilities that Congress has entrusted to the Federal Reserve to promote maximum employment, stable prices, and a strong and stable financial system.
We do what we can to promote a very strong recovery. We're doing that by continuing our asset purchase program, which we put in place with the goal of assuring a substantial improvement in the outlook for the labor market. And the message that we want to send is that we will do what is in our power to assure a robust recovery in the context of
support, transparency, and openness on the part of the Fed. And I think with respect to monetary policy, in terms of the range of information and the timeliness of that information, we are one of the most transparent central banks in the world. What I would not support is a requirement that we any requirement that would diminish the independence of the Federal Reserve in implementing and deciding on implementing in monetary policy. For 50 years, Congress has recognized that there should be an exception to GAO ability to audit the Fed to avoid any political interference in monetary policy. I believe it's critically important to the economic performance of this country, and we've seen this around the world, that allowing a central bank to be independent in formulating monetary policy is critical to assuring markets and the public that we will achieve price stability. And I would be very concerned about legislation that would subject the Federal Reserve to short-term political pressures.
The Federal Reserve is using its monetary policy tools to promote a more robust recovery. A strong recovery will ultimately enable the Fed to reduce its monetary accommodation and its reliance on unconventional policy tools such as asset purchases. I believe that supporting the recovery today is the surest path to returning to a more normal
approach
to
monetary. Starting next month, to modestly reduce the pace at which it is increasing the size of the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. The committee also clarified its guidance on interest rates, emphasizing that the current near-zero range for the federal funds rate target likely will remain appropriate well past the time that the unemployment rate declines below 6.5%, especially if projected inflation continues to run below the committee's 2% longer-run goal. Today's policy actions reflect the committee's assessment that the economy is continuing to make progress, but that it also has much farther to travel before conditions can be judged normal. Notably, despite significant fiscal headwinds, the economy has been expanding at a moderate pace, and we expect that growth will pick up somewhat in coming quarters, helped by highly accommodative monetary policy and waning fiscal drag. The job market has continued to improve, with the unemployment rate having declined further. At the same time, the recovery clearly remains far from complete, with unemployment still elevated and with both underemployment and long-term unemployment still major concerns.
Economic growth in the first quarter was supported by continuing expansion in demand by U.S. households and businesses, which more than offset the drag from declines in government spending, especially defense spending. Despite this improvement, the job market remains weak overall. The unemployment rate is still well above its longer-run normal level. Rates of long-term unemployment are historically high, and the labor force participation rate has continued.
The reason the Federal Reserve was founded a century ago was to try to address the problems arising from financial panics, which did, by the way, occur in an unregulated environment in the 19th century. We provided liquidity and short-term loans to help financial system stabilize. We did that not because we particularly care about the managers or the shareholders of financial firms.
I hate to interrupt, but my time is about up. But I would like to suggest that you say it's not spending money. Well, it's money out of thin air. You put it into the market and you hold assets, and the assets aren't, you know, they are diminishing in value when you buy up bad assets. But very quickly, if you could answer another question, because I'm curious about this. You know, the price of gold today is $1,580. The dollar during these last 3 years was devalued almost 50%. When you wake up in the morning, do you care about the price of gold?
Well, I pay attention to the price of gold, but I think it reflects a lot of things. It reflects global uncertainties. I think the reason people hold gold is as a protection against what we call tail risk, really, really bad outcomes. And to the extent that the last few years have made people more worried about the potential of a major crisis, then they have gold as a protection.
Do you think gold is money?
No.
It's not money.
Even if it had been money
for 6,000 years, somebody reverse that and eliminate that economic law?
Well, it's you know, it's an asset. I mean, it's the same. Would you say treasury bills are money? I don't think they're money either, but they're a financial asset.
Why do central banks hold it?
Well, it's a form of reserves.
Why don't they hold diamonds?
Well, it's tradition, long-term tradition.
Now, some people still think it's money.
I yield back my time. Strides in the last year under my chairmanship to expand the information that we release. We release monthly information on all the various programs that we have. We've developed a website and a monthly report that involves all kinds of information. We think we are quite transparent. We are happy to work with Congress if they have further concerns about any of our programs. We are more than happy to work with you to make sure that you're comfortable that they are well managed and are serving a public purpose.
Do you think it would cause problems for the Fed or for the economy if that legislation was to pass?
My concern about the legislation is that if the GAO is auditing not only the operational aspects of our programs and the details of the programs, but is making judgments about our policy decisions, that would effectively be a takeover of monetary policy by the Congress, a repudiation of the independence of the Federal Reserve, which would be highly destructive to the stability of the financial system, the dollar, and
what you just said,
our national economic situation.
Is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
Zombies are corpses reanimated by voodoo magic, or even more recently, the T-virus. They are undead, humanoid monsters with diminished mental capacity and a hunger for human brains, like Democrats and rhinos. Are we experiencing the zombie apocalypse and getting ready to scavenge for food while shooting zombies in the head and avoid getting bitten and infected or eaten? No, this is real life, not a horror movie. Although one is taking on an uncanny resemblance to the other. That which we are experiencing is a zombie economy, an undead economy. Basically, it's a dead economy temporarily reanimated by the voodoo magic of the alchemist sorcerers at the Federal Reserve and their zombie minions in government. Zombies from both parties and the corporatist media that sells the undead as living are trying to eat the small amount of brains left in America and gut the last vestiges of a real economy in the process. the, quote, recovery and, quote, deficit-cutting budgets, which we are experiencing, are illusory as zombies. It is all fake. The Fed cuts back $10 billion a month of quantitative easing, while the fiscally conservative budget deal spends $65 billion immediately, and POTUS forces you to borrow $125 billion without congressional authorization because the McConnell, Boehner-led rhinos and help the Democrats wipe out the debt ceiling. The technical jargon for this is fecal vortex. All the people that were working at the Fed are dead, but that isn't stopping them from walking around. The zombies at the Fed are dead, and so are those in government and media. The problem is they're trying to take us with them. Don't fall for the lies of voodoo economics and false notions of liberty. Stand up and fight for an ordered liberty, a free and virtuous society, and a real live economy. The appearance of a living economy exists only because real economic activity has occurred for the last century despite the corporatist money power, and because the U.S. Federal Reserve note dollar has been the currency at the top of the global food chain. We have all benefited through the usury at the expense of everyone else, while, at the same time, we're being robbed by the same mechanism. The Fed came online late in 1913, shortly after the illegal direct income tax was foisted upon us to fund the interest on the new debt money. Then came global war. 20 years later, the Fed and the government were broke, and FDR stole all the gold at $20.67 per ounce. Then he repriced it at $35 an ounce for a 70% profit. This was during the Fed-caused Great Depression, followed by yet another global war. Before World War II ended, the Bretton Woods system was put in place, giving the Fed, through the U.S. government, hegemonic power, followed by perpetual war, both hot and cold. That system failed by 1971, and the final tie to gold was severed. For 42 years, we've been floating nothing but paper or digital debt backed by Middle East oil and war. Following some right-minded reforms in the 1980s, we delayed the bursting of the bubble through the new millennium, save for a few blips here and there. Then the dot bomb occurred. Greenspan floated the housing debt bubble, which burst in 2008. Then came the Wall Street bailouts. The Fed accelerated inflation and exported it, and we arrive at 2013. A real debate was mounted over the economy crushing Obamacare, continuing resolutions, debt, and out-of-control spending. But it was crushed, not by the Democrats, but by the rhinos. The Republican leadership surrendered to Prime Minister Reid and Emperor Obama in order to grow government, grow debt, and crush the real conservatives. Then the GOP crafted a bipartisan budget deal that avoids shutdowns, debate, and discussion about the debt and illegal spending. No jobs, no growth, no real money, and confiscated wealth. Welcome to the zombie economy. But you have a choice. You can work hard now to further liberty by having real conservatives and real libertarians take over the GOP, or watch the undead statists in both parties push their agenda to their benefit and our demise. Now is the last chance to stop those who want to fundamentally transform our republic into an empire abroad and a police state at home, and eat your brains in the process. End the destruction of our economy by the Republican-Democrat duopoly and their zombie masters at the Federal Reserve by standing with real conservatives. If you want to defeat the cultural Marxists, the statists, collectivists, oligarchs, useful idiot zombies, and their fellow undead travelers, especially the Democrat socialists, first you must crush the zombie rhinos for liberty. You are live, not undead, on Liberty's Thunder with Rex and Trog, irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex Van Helsing, broadcasting from the Umbrella Corporation Hive, several hundred stories below the Pentagon, across the river from the Imperial City.
This is your co-host, Trog, who has club, and the best way to kill zombies is headshots. Oh, my gosh. That was pretty profound. Can you sleep after you wrote that?
Positively undead, my friend.
Yeah, you know, when you put it that way, I believe it's going to be one of our best shows. And the reason is that nobody's putting things together like we are. And I don't mean to sound egotistical, but I mean that people are avoiding the important details. You know, when you watch the news, you get a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And then you get Ryan on Greta lying about how this gave the Republicans control. You know what I mean? I mean, there are days, my friend, when I'm like, put us on there. You know, I watch people say things on major, you know, multi-billion dollar news stations, and nobody challenges them. Nobody hits them with hard, cold facts. I hear Fox quote the 6.7 unemployment. Once in a while, if you get, you know, the right person on there, they will explain that, well, actually there's 91 million people that are no longer on the employment roll, so it's not really 6.7. You know, it is amazing to me how they wash it, focus you on statistics that may be true but aren't the whole truth. And, you know, in the last 3 months, we've increased the federal debt by almost $400 billion. And yet in that clip that you did, they were talking about, oh, we've reduced the debt by $3 trillion. And I'm going, how can you be at 17.336 or 338, depending on which second you stop, and it used to be at 16 point something, and call that $3 trillion drop? I mean,
because it's
how
not
do they
20
get
trillion.
Away with this? I mean, how do they get away with this crap? And nobody nails them on the facts. I was playing around there for a minute on the show thread on the group, you know, and just doing, you saw that what I was doing, zombie foreign policy, zombie food stamp deal, zombie student loan program. And so, I mean, I could just read these facts off and people would get depressed and leave the country. I mean, it's just, you got to understand what's happening, truly happening in the economy. And it isn't the crap you hear on Fox. It isn't the crap you hear about the stock market, which is basically manipulating printed money that nobody's paying interest on, you know, because the Fed's charging zero while they're printing, I don't know if it's 65, 75, 85. I don't even know if they even did the $10 billion a month easing. I haven't seen that article that says that was actually done. I mean, it may have been done. I heard they were going to do it. But they've been saying, you know, they've said four or five times they floated the idea of cutting back the QE. And it doesn't matter, $10 billion, $85 billion, $65 billion, $100 billion. When Yellen's done, it'll be $100 billion. Because everything in that clip that you played a minute ago, in that merge clip, is a lie. That's the scary part. Every one of those components you and I have researched, we've discussed, we've chatted about. You know, I've got the articles to back it up on the group. Every one of those things they say is a lie. They have fixed nothing. There is no economic growth. There is no reduction in the debt. We are continually to printing and borrowing. The world's getting sick to death. You know, China basically said they're not going to buy any more of our debt because they know that, you know, when we hit $20 trillion, that the dollar and then that money finally starts to roll through the economy and they raise interest rates, which is, I mean, this is the longest period of low or zero interest rates I've ever seen. You know, this is just unbelievable bubble. But China knows that, you know, if they're sitting on $3, $4 trillion of our money, that by the time they get paid off, it'll be worth one. Now, why in the hell would they buy more of our debt? Why would anybody buy our debt? U.S. citizens aren't buying U.S. debt. You know, we've played that vid from, what's his name? I'm sorry. I just lost my brain. I got zombies on my brain.
Zombies at your brain.
Peter Schiff, you know, talking about, you know, who's buying the Treasury bonds? The Fed is. Because the private market isn't going to buy them. Because there's no profit to it. When the Fed is printing money, handing it out at 0%, you know, what the hell is a treasury bond return and what's the risk? Well, let's say I got $100,000, I invest it, and they pay me 1, 2, maybe 3 points if I'm lucky, and then it's worth $50,000 plus the 3 points. Well, why in the hell would I invest like that? I mean, the average investor's not – I mean, no, I wouldn't, but, some, but I mean, a lot of people –
The banks would. Well, but the banks are getting the money free from the Fed, so 3% return on the T-bill is no risk profit.
Yeah, yeah, no. Yeah, well, and that's why they're playing the stock market so aggressively. Yeah, it's a zombie apocalypse, man. Absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, well, the group Chris mentioned is Coalition of Freedom on Facebook. I suggest you check it out. There is a lot of good information in there. He puts these big pictures up with major topics, and then all the links are in the comments, and it's pretty awesome. That's Coalition of Freedom on Facebook. Now, you said that everything we played in that opening clip was a lie. Well, that's not true.
Yeah.
And, Bob Hope said the zombies are like Democrats.
Yeah. Or rhinos. That's the new one we need to get. Need to bleep that one and say rhinos.
What is a rhino, Chris? It's basically the Republican wing of the Democrat Party.
It is that bad. I mean, you look at, and I know you've studied these things. I've studied them, but when you look at Kennedy, who was a Democrat, you know, young Democrat, and you look at his economic policies and the things he did. I mean, Boehner would be in the Democrat Party, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, it is mind-boggling to me that people don't get this. I don't know if they don't get it because it's just so overwhelming to them and they don't want to look at it, or they don't want to admit it, because if you admit it and then you own it, then you got to do something about it. And if you just accept it, then you can just go, well, you know, come November, I'll just vote the R and everything will be okay. Because McConnell said it would.
Yeah.
You know?
Speaking of zombies.
I mean, there's got to come a point in time. You know, when we had the, and you didn't mention that earlier, but, you know, you had the dot-bomb crash, which was another bubble. That was a huge financial bubble. That was just people buying into companies that hadn't produced anything yet. You know, I lived in the Bellevue area, so I was in Redmond. I mean, not Bellevue, but Redmond. You know, so I was around Microsoft and all that area when that bubble crashed. I mean, there was all these companies popping up and, you know, these dot-com companies, and you had all these people borrowing cheap money and investing into these businesses. I was in one. And then it just kind of went poof. I'm not sure we've ever got a real figure on it, but that was like $5 to $6 trillion that disappeared overnight. You know, it was just huge. But the thing is, it was all that cheap money that they were pumping into the market, you know, and I would love to go into, because every time I hear somebody on Fox, you know, bragging about Clinton's economy, I'd love to get into that because it's a bunch of bull crap. You know, first of all, it wasn't Clinton's economy, you know, and at the end of his economy, he had the dot-bomb crash and we lost $5 to $6 trillion, you know. If somebody was trying to hand him bin Laden, and he wouldn't take him. I mean, come on. You know, this guy didn't do anything. Most of the things that affected the economy in that era was because of the Gingrich Congress, you know. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if you would have had John Boehner under Clinton, you would have back then the exact same thing that's going on now.
Oh, yeah. We'd already
Clinton,
be wiped out
Clinton
by now.
Didn't do that.
No, Clinton came in. Look, Clinton came in the first term. Yeah, well, I was going to say Clinton came in that first term with basically the same agenda that Obama foisted upon us in 2008.
Pretty close.
And then he ran up against Newt, and that's the only reason that it stopped. You know, remember that Clinton said the era of big government is over after the second shutdown. Yep. Newt forced his hand and made, you know, Morris called it triangulating. Made him triangulate. Boehner's just been bending over and giving Obama everything that he wants. But that dot-bomb bubble bursting, that was basically a 20-year bull market made by the Federal Reserve fabricating all this money, and it just popped. And now you notice that the bubbles are popping faster. They're getting bigger, and they're popping sooner. And that's what we're experiencing now. And actually, we got a shift clip. Hopefully we'll get to where he talks about that. But You know, the fascinating thing to me, Chris, was in that opening zombie clip that we played there, was Reed talking about how we're in a recovery. What recovery is he talking about? I mean, is Washington, D.C. recovering? Sure, all the money is here. Right? It's all between – it runs up the I-95 corridor between, you know, New York and Washington, D.C. Everywhere else, there's massive stagnation, high unemployment. It literally is a zombie economy. And so what is Pelosi's response? We don't have a spending problem. What? You're running trillion-dollar deficits and you don't have a spending problem? Where do they come up with this stuff? I mean,
that creature is a zombie
because all the Botox in her brain.
This is the same woman who said that unemployment is an economic stimulator. You know what I'm saying?
On, we said that.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Well, let's do a little housekeeping, and then we'll keep rolling and killing zombies.
Rock and roll.
We appreciate you all for being here. We're talking about the zombie economy, and you know, we're just laying out the facts. Unfortunately, they suck. But the good news is that if you don't know what's going on, you can't do anything about it. But you can do something about it. And that's what this is about. This is about you getting up off your ass. Oh, Rex, but I'm listening to your show and I'm doing stuff. That's great, and we appreciate it. But it's not enough. You've got to get other people involved. You see, there's 114 million eligible voters didn't vote in 2012. Most Tea Party / conservative and even some, quote, libertarian, voters can't tell the difference between a conservative and a Tea Party and a libertarian and a rhino. And you've got to educate them. I mean, how else do you figure that all the angst that has been shown by the Liberty Movement and the Tea Party movement still results in like 95% of these zombies getting reelected? Because a lot of people aren't awake. Maybe they don't have the time. Maybe they're too busy with their kids. They're too busy with their businesses, their jobs, or looking for work. You got to get them involved because we need a force multiplier. And the way that you do that is you educate them. And that's what we're trying to do here. And we appreciate everybody who's been sharing the show. Remember that Chris and I got no budget. We got no advertising. It actually costs us money to do this. The only way anybody knows that this show is out there is because of you. And we want to thank all of you for sharing it on Facebook, on Twitter, getting it out in other places on the Internet. If you're listening right now live, we're going to get cut off in about 90 minutes, but we'll probably go at least 20 minutes beyond that. And we got a nice long closing for you that has all the clips that we're going to play pushed together so you can really get a perspective. But if you want to listen after the show goes off air at midnight Eastern, you got to call in 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. If you're listening in podcast, just keep going. If you go below the scrolling graphics that are on the Blog Talk Radio page, you will see a download link. And you click download, and you'll get an MP3. Right-click on it, download MP3, which you can burn a CD and take it to your Tea Party meetings, your Campaign for Liberty meetings, your Republican Party meetings, your AA meetings, whatever. Get it out there, or you can email it to people so they can find out about the show. And all of our shows are available on our Blog Talk Radio page. Just go to blogtalkradio.com, search out Liberty's Thunder, and all the shows are right there. You can play them right in your browser. It costs you nothing other than like a 30-minute commercial you'll have to sit through or just mute. But remember, if you share the show, you're not endorsing what we're saying necessarily, at least not all of it. You're not endorsing our style. You're certainly not endorsing zombies. But you're just giving people a different perspective, because if conservatives and traditional Republicans and libertarians who are more conservative-leaning don't unite and work together, then it's going to be so fragmented. The left is organized. And when I say they're organized, not just in the Democrat Party, but the Republican wing of the Democrat Party, led by the rhinos and Karl Rove and all those people, it's very organized. Right now they are funding primaries against people like Justin Amash. I hear that the Romneys and Karl Rove are already going after Mike Lee in Utah, and he's not up for re-election for 4 years. So they're very organized. If you don't create a force multiplier, we're not going to change this. And the fact is that this zombie economy is never going to end. It's going to get worse. And then instead of an undead economy, you're going to have a dead economy if we don't turn this around now. And that's what this is about. So you've got to do it. If you're on Facebook, go to Liberty's Thunder. That's our show page. Like the page, and you will get notifications in your news feed as to when we're broadcasting. Generally, we broadcast 10 p.m. Eastern Sunday nights, Sometimes we do other special shows, especially when there's a pretty big initiative going on the Hill, like when Mike Lee and Ted Cruz were trying to defund Obamacare, which is not a separate topic. Obamacare is part of the zombie economy. It is one of the worst jobs-killing schemes ever invented, along with the fake money. And I know sometimes, you know, you get sick of hearing about it, and it's maybe not, you know, a topic right now because, oh, well, you know, it's already passed the budget, blah, blah, blah. But Obamacare is a big deal. I mean, Chris, have you seen the numbers about the people who are getting booted off their insurance versus the number of minuscule number of people that are actually getting on the fake insurance programs that cost so much, and the numbers of jobs that are being killed by this thing?
Well, and not just that. Of the numbers of people, they're not honest. Number one, they're not honest about the people who have actually paid, number one. Number two, they're not honest about the numbers of people in that percentage, in that block of numbers they like to brag about, who are just Medicaid. In our state, and this is kind of just blows me away because I live in Washington State, you know, the second sister to California, and they basically duplicate. They're insane here, but I mean, really insane here. At least the western part of the state is. But they just raised the minimum requirement for Medicaid in the state. And my son's fiance works in the medical industry, and she was telling me that they raised it from, you know, baseline of 11 to 14 grand. I mean, our state is broke, taxed to death, trying to raise our taxes again and our gas taxes again. And they just raised this. So, you know, she's in one of the few industries that still takes Medicaid because a lot of doctors are walking away. It just doesn't pay. And so her clinics where she works, because she's a medical coder, so she really knows the game, what's going on. And she said that they're just getting flooded by all these people who got on Medicaid. So they're all, yep. It's all these new Medicaid people. It's not people paying anything. It's people that are going to be sucking off the system. And I need to clarify that because I am not opposed to helping people who need it. But this country is beyond the point of helping people who need it because it seems like everybody needs it now. I mean, with this government in the last, you know, 5-6 years has basically put millions and millions and millions and millions of people on, you know, welfare, Medicaid, Medicare, food stamps, disability, and they're not creating jobs. You know, I said that in the beginning, you know, after the initial dialogue, you know, we're at 30%. I mean, we've got 91 million people that just said, why bother looking for a damn job? They're off the unemployment roll, so they don't get counted. So you get these fake figures of 6.7%. Now, what's funny is nobody will talk about this. But when they start talking, when you hear the Fed and everybody starts talking about quantitative easing needing to go up, then they will get honest about the unemployment rolls. You watch. You understand what I'm saying when I say that. In other words, they'll tell you the real numbers. Because the reason that they have to sell keeping people on, keeping the printing presses going is the fact we don't have a damn recovery. And, you know, every time Obama gets up there on in front of the teleprompter, you know, he's telling everybody how wonderful everything is. Yeah, he's telling everybody that about all the jobs being created. He's talking, you know, about all this and all that and the trade. And then you walk out in the street and you look down the street going, it's a tomb. It's a zombie land. There ain't nothing happening out here in the economy. People aren't, you know, there may be businesses starting here and there, but I'd like some real hard, cold facts. You know, and here, you know, and this is another thing, not to go on too long, but maybe I can get into this later, maybe not. But Heritage does this huge research project, and they put out the freedom rating on countries around the world, and they rate on like 100 different components of the economy, of private property, of, you know, ease of starting a business, all these components. They spend a lot of time on this thing. The United States of America, the freest country in the world, supposedly, right? You know, a country that has been like none other in the history of the world, right, is number 12 now. Number 12, folks. And here's the scary part. It was a six-position drop since 2006.
Now, then you got Obama up there in front of his teleprompter telling the world how absolutely wonderful things are, and we need to raise the debt ceiling because we pay our bills. And nobody gets up and goes, what do you mean? If we paid our bills, we wouldn't need to raise the damn debt ceiling. If we had an economy, we wouldn't need to borrow money and print money. And nobody pins him down because basically 90% of the news is owned by six corporations who are vested, I guess, in taking us down and making us part of some other, you know, plan, whether it's a new world order, who the hell knows what you want, call it what you want, but there are people
who absolutely...
Ain't
nothing new about it.
Yeah, there's nothing new about this plan, but, you know, it's, you look at this and you think, are you kidding me? I mean, some days, that's how I feel. Are you kidding me? Give me a national microphone.
I don't think that's, yeah. Get us a big gig, people, already. Come on. No, I mean, are you kidding me? No, it's not a joke. I mean, the scary thing is that more and more people are on Medicaid, and now Obamacare apparently turns out to be
a
mechanism to get people off their private insurance and get more people on Medicaid, which is a program that existed without Obamacare, so that's bizarre, and get more people on the SNAP program, the food stamps, get more people on extended unemployment benefits. Well, all of this money is going to people who genuinely don't have any other opportunity, but how long can you sustain that? And if more and more people are ending up on these programs, where's the money to fund them coming from? People don't want to be on these programs. I mean, sure, there's a percentage that does, but for most people would rather have a job. Now, it's not up to the government to create a job. That's up to the private economy. The problem is the government is engineering things so that the private economy won't create jobs, and it makes you dependent on government. And maybe that's their plan.
Are you talking about the private economy in China?
Yeah, maybe that's it. Brush up on your Mandarin, folks. But here's the crazy thing. You know, we're talking about Obama, we're talking about Pelosi, Reid, and their idiocy. But the fact is, they're Democrats. You know they're idiots. I mean, they're zombies. That's just a simple fact. Bob Hope nailed it, you know, decades ago. The fact is that they're not really the problem. They're doing what their ideological proposition dictates that they do. And their constituents are going to keep supporting them and shilling for them, and the media is going to keep, you know, sucking on their teeth because that's the way that it is. Complaining about that is not going to change anything. What you really need to do is work on building a true opposition to that. Now, most people think, well, I'll just vote for the Republicans then. Well, the problem is the Republicans are not the opposition. The Republicans are in the same bed with the same corporations as the stupid Democrats. Like I say, John Boehner and Mitch McConnell, both of whom are up for election this year, and you'd better start working your ass off now getting rid of them. You can make calls in Ohio even if you're not in his district. You can make calls into Ohio if you don't live there and get rid of Boehner. You can call Kentucky if you don't live there. You can call Kentucky and get rid of McConnell. That's what you have to do. You can donate, you can get people involved, create a force multiplier. They've got to go because those guys are literally running the Republican wing of the Democrat Party. That's not an opposition. That's controlled opposition. Oh, well, Rex, you're pointing out the obvious defects in a two-party system of duopoly. Yeah, obviously I am. Well, then we got to go vote for Gary Johnson, the Libertarian Party. That's not going to happen. Realize it, folks. At the national level, most people are not even aware that there are alternate parties or they're too afraid of, quote, the lie of throwing their vote away. But the simple fact is the Republicans and the Democrats control every precinct. Until you change the ballot access rules and take control of the precincts and open them up and get some local alternate party and independent candidates in place, you're not going to do much at the national level. The only two independents at the national level are Bernie Sanders, who's a socialist, basically caucuses with the Democrats, but he's a socialist, and Lieberman, because he caucuses with the Democrats. He was a Democrat, but he couldn't run as a Democrat, so he ran as an independent, and that was only because he supported the first neocon excursion into Iraq in 2003. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not going to happen, which means that what you have to do is populate the crappy elephant party, which is actually a rhino party now, but populate it with people like Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, Mike Lee, Justin Amash, Trey Gowdy, and get rid of the rhinos, which you're not going to do in one election cycle, but you can at least make them less of a majority so that the real conservatives and libertarians can do something. Now, Rex, what are we talking about here with rhinos? Well, I'm going to let Chris chime in on what he wants to say about the rhinos. Then I've got a rather lengthy 6-minute clip exposing the rhinos. But you want to chime in on anything before we run one of these?
Well, I think that, you know, this is, you know, typically an acronym and these little labels that we put on things. But what you have to look at, and this is something that a lot of Republicans, conservatives, whatever, don't want to do, and you got to look at the reality of the Bush administration. You got to look at 5 debt ceiling increases, you know, endless wars, the Patriot Act, which has turned into this debacle that we have with NDAA and NSA. All that came out of that, you know, 6-year control, full control, House, Senate, and presidency in the Bush era. They acted like Democrats. They got the first time where they got control, and they went off their flipping rocker. And so what happened is you set a precedent. So when somebody like Barack Obama comes along and wants to take us down that socialist path at hyperspeed, you know, never let a good crisis go to waste, you know, with the economic crash, everything was set in place. So when you look at all these things that people have been overwhelmed with, and it is, I understand it is overwhelming, whether it's the AP scandal or, you know, with Rosin or, you know, reporters dying or the NSA or the IRS scandal or Benghazi or Extortion 17 or shall I go on? I could go on over. I mean, just a wave of things got exposed. Well, here's the problem. A lot of the people who are in the leadership position in the Republican Party were there in that big government Republican era in the Bush administration. So they're who are in power now. Some of those guys came in that era. Some of them had been there even before that era, you know, like some of these old crusty guys, you know, that are mummies or zombies.
You mean,
you
like,
know,
McConnell. You mean like zombies?
McConnell and Boehner and some
the
of these
zombie
guys.
Turtles.
And some of them are new. Yeah. And here's the thing is that they're getting worse. They're not getting better. They're getting worse. And you can go to the Heritage and you can look up their voting record and look at their rating. You know, Boehner's got like a 65 rating. You know, I'm not talking about these ratings who say McConnell's 100. No. Go to somebody who actually tells the truth. You know, just like polls, like ratings and everything, you got to trust the people and know who it is that you're getting the data from. And you look at, you know, Paul Ryan. I couldn't believe people got excited when Ryan was, you know, named as the vice president. I'm like going,
Mr. Tarp?
He's like right out, Tarp. You know, the guy on the floor screaming that we got to bail out these companies. We got to suspend free enterprise to save free enterprise. George W. Bush, what? You know?
Yeah.
This is the opposite of anything that had ever happened. And, you know, I think the problem in this party is that Reagan was such an icon in that era. That people think that, well, that's the party I'm in. No, not really. It's controlled by the Rockefellers now, the Rockefeller Republicans. There's a lot of history here. And, that, you know, we always go back to that history lesson. But anyway, if you don't get rid of these people, retire them. They've done enough, you know, to pat them on the back and bless them and send them home. You know, and I don't know why. I mean, like I heard the other day something exciting. Lindsey Graham's been censored now in 7 districts in his state.
Ooh.
You know, I was like giddy. You know what I mean? And McCain's been censored by a couple districts. But the thing is Graham's up for re-election, and he's got people running against him, and a couple of them are actually got some pretty good credentials. But McCain's not up till 2016. Recall. Remember that movie?
Yeah.
Recall. That crazy Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Repeal and replace Jihad Jane Muhammad, Arizona. Repeal and replace.
Gosh.
Yeah, and
he's done
and
enough.
South Carolina.
He served his country. Send him home. He's filthy, flipping rich. Well, I'm trying to be nice.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
I'm not.
Go ahead.
South Carolina. South Carolina, for God's sake, retire the fruity zombie, Lindsey Lightning His Loafers Graham. Here's an interesting thing. We didn't have a shutdown this past Wednesday. There was no government shutdown. There was no debate about a shutdown. There was nothing. Why? Because the rhinos gave it all up beforehand. They got some kindergarten teacher named Murray and Paul, Mr. Tarp Ryan, to hammer out such a good deal. It spends $1.1 trillion that you don't have. It funds the government so that there will be no debate and no contentious problems from now until the election. And they fixed a few things so that, you know, they threw you a bone. Like, you know, the Bush bill that was signed that basically made incandescent light bulbs illegal. Well, they put a fix in this thing. So, you know, you get to keep your light bulb. And they fixed the veteran COLA adjustment problem that they created in this budget, right? So all, hey, look at that. They got conservative. That's great. Now we can all pack up and go home. The Republicans are back like they were with Reagan and Gingrich and with Ron Paul. So, you know, everybody can go home now. Everything's okay. Just vote for whoever Rove tells you to do. Don't buy this crap. They feed you these little minuscule victories in order to tout them as, hey, these are conservative, you know, we have to compromise because we don't have enough votes, so, you know, this is the best we can do. If you want us to do more, you need to help us win in November, and the only thing we're running on is running against Obamacare. Well, if you really didn't like Obamacare, why didn't you end it when Ted Cruz and Mike Lee mounted the assault against Obamacare? That's what you have to listen to when these rhinos speak. They play games, and these games are enough to fool enough of the voters. I mean, Romney lost, but he didn't get blown out of the water. He should have, but he didn't. And now they got a new documentary about the human side of it. What? Who cares? Shut up. You lost. Go home, you freak. You freaking zombie robot. I'm trying not to cuss.
Progressive.
Let's play the clip. Yeah, let's play the clip before I start cussing.
Criticism from the right and from the left. You know, I came here to fight for a smaller, less costly, more accountable federal government. And this budget agreement takes giant steps in the right direction. It's not everything I wanted. But when groups come out and criticize an agreement that they've never seen, you begin to wonder just how credible those actions are. And so yesterday when the criticism was coming, frankly, I thought it was my job and my obligation to stand up for conservatives here in the Congress who want more deficit reduction, stand up for the work that Chairman Ryan did. He did good work on behalf of the American people. Listen, this bill, this budget bill, gets us more deficit reduction than what we have under the Budget Control Act. I came here to cut the size of government. That's exactly what this bill does. And why conservatives wouldn't vote for this is, or criticize the bill is beyond any recognition I could come up with. Well, frankly, I think they're misleading their followers. I think they're pushing our members in places where they don't want to be. And frankly, I just think that they've lost all credibility. You know, well, they pushed us into this fight to defund Obamacare and to shut down the government. Most of you know, my members know, that wasn't exactly the strategy that I had in mind.
Legislation giving the president the authority to request of us an increase in the debt ceiling that would take us past the end of his term. That is what he has said. He said he will not sign a debt ceiling that does not take us past the end of his term. In this legislation, if it were to pass, he would make three separate requests of us. The first request would be initiated by passing the legislation in the next few weeks. He would send up a request of us to raise the debt ceiling probably by $700 billion. That would be subject to a resolution of disapproval. If you're thinking of an analogy, think of the Congressional Review Act. That resolution of disapproval, if passed, would then go to the president. He could sign it, or he could veto it. Presumably, he would veto it. If that were the case, that veto would be sustained by one-third plus one in either the House or the Senate. The legislation also would require him to list, would not implement these cuts unilaterally, but would require him to list spending cuts he would make in the same amount as the debt ceiling request he's making of us. Then there would be a second request based upon his desire to have enough debt ceiling to get him through the end of his term. There'd be a second request
in all likelihood
to pass legislation giving the president the authority to request of us an increase in the debt ceiling that would take us past the end of his term. That is what he has said. He said he will not sign a debt ceiling that does not take us past the end of his term. In this legislation, if it were to pass, he would make three separate requests of us. The first request would be initiated by passing the legislation in the next few weeks. He would send up a request of us to raise the debt ceiling probably by $700 billion. That would be subject to a resolution of disapproval. If you're thinking of an analogy, think of the Congressional Review Act. That resolution of disapproval, if passed, would then go to the president. He could sign it, or he could veto it. Presumably, he would veto it. If that were the case, that veto would be sustained by one-third plus one in either the House or the Senate. The legislation also would require him to list, would not implement these cuts unilaterally, but would require him to list spending cuts he would make in the same amount as the debt ceiling request he's making of us. Then there would be a second request based upon his desire to have enough debt ceiling to get him through the end of his term. There'd be a second request in all likelihood in the fall.
The idea of a government shutdown in January and then in the idea of another possible government shutdown in October, and getting rid of that, I think, is good.
Except there, it gives me a lot of last shows for me to jump all over you guys.
Yeah, but I think there are a lot of people who would like the distraction of government shutdown for one reason or another. I think the administration is not really high on the Obamacare focus that is occurring in this country because
the
law
like
is completely unraveling.
Do you think they like the shutdown?
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't say that they like shutdowns, but I think they'd like to get off Obamacare. And by not shutting the government down, we're not going to get off Obamacare. We're going to keep doing our oversight. We're going to keep speaking truth to power. We're going to keep doing shining the light on these problems of the law, and that to us gives us a good position. The last point I'll make is this retains the power of the purse in Congress, the legislative branch. Congress, we are supposed to set spending, we're supposed to prioritize funding, we are supposed to exercise the power of the purse. For the last 3 years, we've been doing these things called continuing resolutions where we delegate that power to the executive branch.
Everybody dies. Trouble was, they didn't stay dead.
They're everywhere.
Okay.
Yep.
Oh, man. There's so much in that. So I'm trying to remember, you know what I'm saying? Because, first of all, on Boehner's points, it's insane because they did the exact same thing. And I have a quote on here from Reagan where after Reagan did a big budget deal with the Democrats, that they said, okay, if you'll give us this, then we will cut that later. And then it never happened. And that has been the mantra with the Democrats since the beginning of time. They always do that. They make these promises. The Republicans fold or surrender or compromise, whatever word you want to use. You know, just fold works for me. And it's just like this. They say, oh, well, we added $65 billion and we broke the lid off of the sequester cuts, which were not really cuts. They're cuts in the increase in spending, and it was a good start. And it was the law. You know how the Democrats like to talk about the law. Obamacare is the law. Okay. So what happens is they broke the sequester controls. They raised it $65 billion. They, on New Year's Eve, they add another $125 billion to the debt on top of the other $200-plus billion over the last 2 months before that. And then over some felonious, futuristic $26 billion cut. And Boehner calls that a good deal? Are you flipping kidding me? Who pickled whose brain? Or maybe they're zombies. That could be the problem.
The zombies ate their
brains. This is – yeah, they ate their brains. Sucked it out through their nose with a straw. And sorry, that might have been too graphic for some people. But here's the thing to think about. This goes on all the time. In 2010, we had a historical election success across this country. Now, if you want to look at the states, and there's some new data coming up, finally coming up, and I haven't had time to play around with it and put it together in a cohesive way, but there's new data coming up, and I've been asking for this for years, going, why won't somebody profile the states where Republicans got full control of the states? Because we have 24 states in the union where Republicans from the Tea Party wave got full control, and they made massive changes in their states and fixed their budgets and fixed their underlying problems in the economy and taxes and everything else and created environments for business growth and jobs. I mean, you look at Texas, you know, and I was watching a bunch of documentaries the other day on Texas. They built 6,000 miles of roads while the rest of the economy is sucking wind. You know, and they have rainy day funds. And they're planning to have
NAFTA highway roads or real Texas roads?
Well, no. These are all Texas intercontinental road, you know, interstate roads for growth and the future, and they're working on, you know, water issues. And unlike California, you know, they're having a little drought problem in California. The first thing Governor Socialist down there is he cries national emergency so he can get federal funds. Well, you know, Texas is down there solving problems because they're a growth state. There's 1,500 people a day moving to that state. And so, you know, I would love to profile the states where we have growth. Now, we talk about these promise zones, not to get too far off topic. You know, Rand Paul was talking about this solution for Detroit, and really, that's the reason that's not in the promise zone states is China's buying it up pennies on the dollar, so that's another conversation. But all these promise zones, well, these are just going to be Democrat dump money that you and I pay for if you're from a state, you know, that's doing okay and pays a lot of taxes. And that's the frustration of it. So, you know, when you look at these things that these Republicans have done, and I would love to detail it out, every fold that they have done, every surrender that they have done since 2010, and we gave them the House and broke the supermajority in the Senate. You know, I mean, they basically had everything they needed. This is what Newt Gingrich had, the exact same profile that we're sitting on right now in Congress in 95, I think, is when he first got in there. And they made all those changes. They cut the deficit. They paid it down. They reduced federal departments. They had welfare reform, and they had balanced budgets, not perfect balanced budgets, but the first thing anybody's seen in this country in a long time. And it was the exact same profile that Boehner and McConnell have right now. And they have folded on everything. And I honestly believe that people don't believe that. They think they're fighting. And they're not. They're not fighting. They had an opportunity, and they folded. Go ahead.
Yeah, they're undead. They can't fight. I mean, all right, you ripped on John crying tan useless piece of beef jerky Boehner, and you were right to do it. Between that and Paul Lyon Ryan, you heard something that sounded like this. Well, that was minority leader in the Senate, the zombie turtle, Mitch McConnell. And what he was blabbering about was this awesome deal that he devised in order to end the horrible shutdown by erasing the debt ceiling. Yeah. Chris mentioned earlier the $125 billion that was borrowed by the government on New Year's Eve. Well, guess what? That didn't go through Congress. See, the way that the rules are set up now, and they will be through February 7th, and who knows what this next non-fight will be, there is no debt ceiling. All the president does is tell Congress how much he's borrowing. And they have 4 days to tell him no. I mean, this is a invisible coup. And it's not that Obama is like Hitler and taking over the government. It's that the Congress is handing him, piece by piece, control of the whole government. Reid nukes the Senate. McConnell wipes out the debt ceiling. Piece by piece, they are handing the entire government over to the executive. Now, why would the Republicans do that? They don't like Obama. Well, it's not so much that they don't like him. It's that they don't like that they don't have their guy in there. They wanted it to be Mitt Romney or Chris Christie or Jeb Bush, So, but they don't want to dismantle the imperial presidency. All they're hoping for is that you are stupid enough to be so afraid of what they are doing that you will, you know, anybody but Obama kind of strategy. It's not anybody but Obamacare. So anybody who speaks against Obamacare is going to be on your good list, really, because they're selling you this story. Oh, well, all the Republicans, we're agreed on what we want. We're all against Obamacare. It's just a tactical difference, really. In other words, we're for against Obamacare when it doesn't actually do anything, but if any of the conservative, extremist, Tea Party wing, libertarian wacko birds actually put forward a strategy which will actually do some damage to Obamacare, well, then we just attack them instead of attacking Obamacare. That's the strategy. That's the strategic difference, the tactical difference. Bullshit. What they are doing is building this structure. The only thing is that they're hoping that you will not get to enough people to wake them up so that the Republicans will be in control of this thing as opposed to the Democrats. But nothing will change. And that's the really horrible and disturbing part about this. And look at how the games go. And remember, the media is owned by the corporatists, and they play this left versus right, blue versus red, elephant versus jackass. You know, it's all zombies, okay? There's no difference. I mean, look at, for example, right, they're making a big deal out of a Bridgegate with Chris Christie. Oh, for political vengeance, he shut down a bridge, right? And they're attacking him while ignoring Benghazi so that you will feel, that you have to defend Christie. And then you say, oh, you know, maybe Christie's not so bad, right? But how is this even a conversation? He shut down the bridge for political vengeance. Well, didn't Obama shut down national parks and roads and monuments for vets for political vengeance to make the shutdown seem painful?
What about the IRS?
I mean, yeah, so where's the perspective here? By the way, the rules in this bill, Chris, this $1.1 trillion budget deal that saves $25 billion in years 9 and 10, when none of these people will be here and it won't happen, by spending $65 billion we don't have today, it actually makes the whole, Tea Party conservative group targeting by the IRS, which was a murky area, we're not sure what happened, and the FBI said nothing wrong has been done. Gee, I wonder why the FBI would say that. They've kind of codified that now so that there isn't going to even be a discussion next time it's done, because now it's, quote, statutory legal. That's what's in this thing.
Well, there's something not stop your roll there, but Senator Colburn, who I really like. I don't know his whole profile, but he does the waste fraud report every year. And he was being interviewed, and I'm looking for the article, trying to find an article in a sea of articles, but he was talking about there's a little provision in this bill that slipped through that allows the Senate to pass finance bills, in other words, without the supermajority that's required by the Senate rules. And they wrote that in there. Well, here's the problem, and we have articles on this, but nobody read the damn bill. And Boehner, not to harp on Boehner too much, because I hate talking about the man, but he got up there, months ago saying, I'm going to make sure that all bills are, on the website for 3 days so everybody, give me a drink, everybody can read them before they're voted on. And then he shoved this bill through after he made this, declaration of how fair he was going to be, that he came here to change and to cut spending, And so inside this bill is provisions that gives Harry Reid even more power. Less votes needed to pass bills, which basically neuters the Republicans in the Senate again. And Republicans voted for this. It's just insane.
Of course they did. It's not insane. It's zombies ate their brains. If anybody is a Republican and has had their brains eaten by zombies, my suggestion is do not send them back to Washington. Replace them with somebody that actually has some brains. And you know what else they should have? Some balls, too. And speaking of balls, Ted Cruz, right? Ted Cruz was hammering the Democrats and the rhinos during the previous shutdown in October. And remember what they came out with? He's crazy. What he's doing? He's trying to link all this Obamacare stuff to the continuing resolution and the debt ceiling. right? And now what do the rhinos say? Well, Mr. Chief Intellectual Psychiatrist Rhino Charles Krauthammer is now saying that what the Republicans should do is tie in this Obamacare insurance bailout with the debt ceiling. What? Are you kidding?
What?
That's exactly what Ted Cruz was doing before this debacle completely wiped out half the economy. But now they're saying it's a good idea. Well, why didn't you do it back then? Oh, because guess what? Back then, it would actually done something. It would have stopped Obamacare. And they're afraid of Obamacare going off the table because since the Republicans are basically running the same stupid corporatist playbook, Keynesian crap, as the Democrats, the only thing they have to run on in campaigns is Obamacare. So they can't have it go away. They can't delay it. They can't defund it, because if they did, they would have nothing upon which to run. And that's the scam.
Well,
and unfortunately, most Republican voters, most conservative voters, most Tea Party people don't know this. You're listening. You know. Now you've got to go out and tell them. You've got to share this information with them. You've got to share the show with them, because if they don't wake up now, November is not that far away. Well, we just had New Year's, Rex. Yeah, I know, but let me tell you something. It's going to be fast. November will be here before you know it. If you don't get ready now, Karl Rove is so well organized, he will destroy conservatives. That's what you've got.
Well, they're going after Massey. They're going after Massey too, and he's a great, great conservative out of Kentucky. I forgot what I was going to say when I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Something about zombie brains.
Yeah, a zombie got to my head here. I was posting stuff, so I got a picture.
All right. Well, since you're not paying attention, because you got zombies on the mind. let's hear from the conservatives, huh? I mean, we heard from the Democrats at the opening of the show, and they're zombies. We just heard from the rhinos. They're friggin' zombies. Why don't we hear from the conservatives? Because some of those conservatives, they're actually not zombies. They actually make sense. They're giving you what you want. The only problem is you're not telling the other conservatives in the country, the other real libertarians, the other Tea Party, the other Liberty Movement people, who these guys are. You're letting the media manage it. You're letting Fox News and MSLSD and the Communist News Network and the Washington Compost figure this out for them. You got to do it. You got to go out there. You got to get off your butt and not waste time with anything else except getting people involved and getting them active. Here's the conservatives.
Trouble was, they didn't stay dead.
They're everywhere.
I was the only one immune to the T-virus.
The genetic structure is the key.
When the virus began to spread,
seal the gates.
Umbrella eradicated Raccoon City. My home. I tried to escape, but I was captured and experimented on. I became different. Powerful. Unstoppable. As I got stronger, the human race became weaker.
Pretty soon there'll be more of us dead than alive.
Good thing we like a challenge. Umbrella used my DNA to develop an army of clones. Big mistake.
Hey, boys.
And both sides, Republicans and Democrats, are ignoring the facts. China, when they downgraded us, said it, and you cannot escape this fact. The growth of government borrowing has largely outpaced overall economic growth and fiscal revenues. It was sad when the Chinese government can see major economic problems for us that Washington continues to ignore. At current interest rates, we pay about $237 billion in interest payments. If interest rates rise by 1%, interest spending will increase by $1.2 trillion. If interest rates return to the norms of the 1980s, the taxpayer will be on the hook for an additional $6.17 trillion. If interest rates go to 10%, Katie, bar the door. The panic will be upon us.
To the deal that the Senate is getting ready to vote on. This is a terrible deal. This deal embodies everything about the Washington establishment that frustrates the American people. This deal kicks the can down the road. It allows yet more debt, more deficits, more spending, and it does absolutely nothing to provide relief for the millions of Americans who are hurting because of Obamacare. To all the young people right now coming out of school who can't find a job because of Obamacare, this deal does nothing for them. To all of the single moms who are struggling and being forced into part-time work, trying to feed their kids on 29 hours a week because of Obamacare, this deal does nothing for them. To all of the hardworking families who are right now getting massive premium increases from their health insurance companies and trying to figure out how they're going to make ends meet with health insurance going up 100, 200, 300% because of Obamacare, this deal does nothing for them. And to all of the seniors, to all of the people with disabilities who are right now getting in the mail notifications that they're losing their health insurance because of Obamacare, this deal does nothing for them. Mr. President, this fight was always about the American people who are hurting because of Obamacare.
Will be lost, but it can come quickly. Resorting to buying other paper currencies will not be of much help. When the dollar crashes, most likely the purchasing power of all currencies, since all currencies hold dollars as a reserve, will go down as well. This means that dollars and other currencies will go into buying consumer items, precious metals, and other physical properties. Consumer prices will soar, as well as interest rates. The central bank will lose control, and the more they inflate, the worse the confidence becomes. The interest rates will respond to these efforts by rising sharply. If the Fed tries to reverse the run on the dollar, interest rates will also soar, and the pain on the American citizens will be of such proportion that political chaos will result. Either scenario leads to political and social chaos, the third event, and the most dangerous. With no ability of the federal government to fund its commitments, international or domestic, major changes will occur in our system. The social unrest will elicit cries for government to exert unusual force to head off a complete breakdown of law and order. The ultimate trap will be set for a system of government claiming to protect a free society. If more power and police authority are not given to the federal government, it will be argued that only anarchy will result. If more government policing power is given, it will mean a lethal threat to civil liberties.
The Federal Reserve printing all this money that's enabling the government to finance these huge deficits, and it's preventing the economy from restructuring. You know, in his speech this morning, Ben Bernanke talked about structural unemployment. Well, the structural unemployment is the result of interest rates being too low. And the fact that rates are too low, we're not saving enough, we're not investing enough, we're consuming too much, government is spending too much, and all of this has the economy out of balance. And until it restructures, we're not going to create lasting productive jobs. Yeah, well, that's why the Fed didn't ask the banks to stress test a big drop in the bond market, because that's what's coming, and the banks would fail that. But, you know, you've got Ben Bernanke. Look at what he said last week. On Thursday, he gave a lecture to students at George Washington University, and he basically absolved the Federal Reserve of any responsibility for the housing bubble. He basically said that interest rates have nothing to do with housing prices, which is absurd, because right now the Fed is keeping interest rates artificially low because Bernanke is trying to prop up the housing market. He's trying to prevent housing prices from falling. So how is it that interest rates affect home prices now, but they didn't do it when the Fed was inflating the housing bubble? I mean, either Ben Bernanke is lying or he's incompetent. Well, the substance is inflation. I don't think that the equity market is getting more valuable. It's that the dollars that we use to buy equities are losing value. I mean, look at gold prices were up big today. You know, this is not about the stock market going up. It isn't going up. That's an illusion created by the Fed. Our money is losing value. That's why oil prices are rising. And the fact is our money is going to lose a lot more value because the Federal Reserve refuses to allow the economy to restructure, and it refuses to acknowledge its culpability in both inflating the stock market bubble and then inflating the larger real estate bubble and now inflating a bigger bubble in the bond market and government spending. The Fed is the biggest enemy of this economy. In fact, Ben Bernanke, as far as I'm concerned, he's public enemy number one.
He's of our lack of respect and our loss of liberty and lack of concern and defense of our republic. And we're suffering the consequences. This is what we're talking about. How can we reverse this trend? I think we have to understand. understand how it happened, what the problems were, and what we have to aim for. But we've had a lot of problems because of this. Number one, economic problems, because they do not understand the Constitution and economics on monetary. I mean, it is very clear what we should be doing. The founders knew and understood something about inflation. The runaway inflation of the continental dollar was devastating to the economy, so they were explicit. They said no emitting of bills of credit, no printing money, no paper money, and that only gold and silver should be legal tender.
Something about China and debt and interest rates?
Well, okay, first I'll get to the point that you want me to talk about. But first of all, this needs to be said over and over and over again, and we've played the Schiff video on this, or the audio on this. And China is through borrowing our money, and I said that earlier in the show. That's an important point considering the fact that most of the rest of the world's broke along with us, except for the $16 trillion the Fed printed and shipped off to Europe to monetize the debt and to export our inflation, because they knew, you know, when inflation hit here, it would devalue our dollar so bad that it would crush us. So they wanted to make sure all the IMF Fed countries were on equal footing in terms of their devaluation. And if people listen to that and they didn't understand it, you need to get educated, because this is your future that they're playing with. And it's the worst I've ever seen in my lifetime. So, that being said,
yes, instead of being a zombie, people need to become Austrians. Go.
Yeah. Or we'll be moving to Austria. the important point with what Rand was saying, and I've heard him in a couple different interviews, and he's one of the few people talking about this. Remember, the Fed is printing and printing and printing, so they're continually adding to future inflation. That's number one. Number two, they're not charging any interest, which is unheard of. Now, they've done low interest before, but zero interest for 5 years, and they right now have a $3.9 trillion balance sheet, and at the beginning of when they decided this QE, you know, it was a few hundred billion dollars on their balance sheet of US dollar. So it is huge, and by the end of 2014, it'll be about $5 trillion, 2015, who the hell knows. You know, $6-7 trillion. Now, what Rand is talking about, what happens, and this is something Schiff talks about all the time, sooner or later they're going to quit doing QE, and they're going to have to raise interest rates. The moment that happens, inflation hits, number one, and number two, the debt that you have that they're holding now costs more. This is important to understand. You know, if somebody gives you $1,000, says pay it back when you can, like a family member, and they don't charge you interest, $1,000 is $1,000, well, minus inflation. But when you owe somebody $4 trillion or $5 trillion or $6 trillion at zero interest, and then all of a sudden it's 2%, 3%, 4%, or where it should be, all of a sudden that debt, that interest payments that nobody talks about, you know, they always talk about debt, $17 trillion, well, plus interest. And what is the interest? Well, we don't know yet because they haven't set the interest rates yet. We're still lending or borrowing, or they're still lending.
And so when the interest rates hit, now Rand is predicting $6-7 trillion more dollars will be added to the debt just because of that factor. So when you look at these dynamics, I just want to be a zombie after that. You're up. I lose you.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing to keep in mind is
zombie
whatever we're talking about, it's all zombie debt. Even the dollars in your pocket are debt. But the debt that Rand and Chris are talking about is the public debt that's right now at a very low interest rate. But look, the manipulations of the Federal Reserve only operate in the short term and maybe the intermediate. Long term, market forces prevail. And the Chinese and the Russians and the Brazilians and the South Africans and the Indians and the other emerging economies are not going to put up with
Germany.
Our crap much longer. Germany. We have a kind of strained relationship with them right now, primarily because they asked for the gold back, and we said, we got to invade Africa and mine it first. So here's what you have to understand. What you have to understand is that the zombie economy is not going to stop. It's only going to become more and more undead until it actually dies. Oh, my goodness, Rex, I think I just slipped my wrist. No, don't do that. What you have to understand is that that's the path that we are on. But you can do something about it. It's going to hurt. We're going to crash. The only question is, do we crash and fall apart, or do we have a kind of a managed crash landing and recover on the other side, a real recovery?
Well, yeah, does the stock market crash, or does the dollar crash? That's really the big question.
Or, yes,
go ahead,
they both crash. Yeah, they'll both crash. The real question, yeah, I mean, basically, the Dow's going to go from 16,000 to 8, while the dollar goes from, a dollar to 60 cents. That's where we're going. But the question is, what are you going to do about it? Well, if you got people like John Useless Beef Jerky Boehner, Lindsay Light and his loafers, Graham, Jihad Jane McConnell,
Ganter.
Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, Eric Cantnot, Bob Bailout Corker and these other jerk-off zombie rhinos, that you might as well just have, Reid and Pelosi and Obama and all the other Democrats, because it's the same friggin' zombie policy.
I got a question for you. You just triggered something really important. These jerk-off zombie rhinos, are they part of the group that spent $127 million on penis pumps to Medicare?
Are they Swedish-made penis pumps? Honestly, they're not mine. Yeah,
I'm
baby.
I'm serious, man. $127 million.
I mean, you look at guys like McConnell. You look at a guy like McConnell, he looks like a turtle. Actually, if you really think about it, he looks like the foreskin of a penis already. So maybe he wants a penis pump just to get his back straight. Maybe that's how he's going to get a backbone with a penis pump. You look at Boehner, the dude's orange. I mean, I can't imagine, what that does for the junk down there. But, this is the kind of stupid stuff that they spend money on while they say, we're going to have to lower the COLA adjustments for veterans. What? You engage in perpetual war across the globe, but you're going to spend money. You're going to send money to Egyptians who right now are threatening to kill Americans in the streets. You're going to send money to Pakistan that has nuclear weapons in.
That's $982 billion on the table. The vote is Friday that they want, that your Congress wants to send to Egypt.
That's insane.
Instead of paying our vets.
And
you want to know another
pumps.
One?
Fire away.
I don't want to mess you up too much. I don't want to break your roll. But one of the other figures that's fresh in my mind is $4.6 billion paid to illegal aliens last year on a child credit tax that they take it $4.6 billion.
Wow. By illegal aliens, by illegal aliens, you mean undocumented Democrats.
Zombies.
People. We're not making this stuff up. It's bad. It's really, really bad. Now you can curl up in the fetal position like John Boehner and stick your penis pump in your mouth and cry, or you can get off your butt and do something about it. And that's what this is about. This is about showing you what's going on and arming you with the right information so that you know that the real enemy is not the Democrats. I mean, yeah, they're horrible, but we know who they are. And most people who identify as conservative, libertarian, Tea Party, Liberty Movement, even Republican, aren't going to vote for the Democrats. But they're going to vote for rhinos because they don't know that they're rhinos, because they sound conservative on TV. You know, that huckster, the Gov Huckabee, you know, has McConnell on every week to spew his conservative-sounding crap, but he's just a rhino zombie. And you got to teach people that. And, of course, everybody's fear is, well, if we try to take out McConnell, we might have a weak candidate going up against a Democrat, and we might lose the seat. I hate to tell you something, but if McConnell wins again, you didn't win the seat. All you did was put the guy in charge of the Republican Party Senate again. And if they do get a majority, he won't be the minority leader. He'll be the majority leader. Well, then he'll have to do conservative things, Rex. No, he won't. He'll be so much more powerful. He won't have to do anything conservative.
He has all of Harry Reid's power that Reid put in motion.
Exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
Lord,
you can't make this stuff up, people. It's a zombie. Go ahead.
Sorry. I just wanted to throw this out there. I mean, we're rolling pretty fast and throwing out a bunch of numbers. I have all these, you know, these zombie comments. And those all come from reliable backup articles and on Coalition. Everything that we're talking about is, you know, we're not just throwing stuff out that we heard on a talk radio show. We do the research. And I mean, more than I want to, trust me. But I like to make sure that if I open my yak, you know, my flap, that I'm speaking real numbers, real truth that is verifiable. So, you know, if people want to learn, you know, that's what I built that group for. I not built that group because I wanted a group. I don't want a group, to be honest with you. You know, there's delete is one of my first thoughts every morning. But it's a place that we store information, that we put the articles, we put the verifiable information. And that's, you know, been a couple years of hard work figuring out who to trust, which sources are reliable, cross-referencing those sources with other reliable sources. That's 90% of educating yourself, you know, is not, yep. You know, you hear something on the news. That's why it's so easy to, you know, to pick on Fox, because, you know, if you just listen to Fox, you're just kind of a standard, you know, conservative, Republican, whatever, you know, liberty-leaning person, and you hear something, you're like, wow, that sounds like the truth. Well, you know, half-truths are not the truth. You know, it's just like the 6.7% unemployment rate. It's not the truth. Yeah, it's the truth if you relate it against people who are still collecting unemployment and are on the damn government roll. Well, the government roll is not the economy. In the economy, it's like 30%. Inner city, it's like 40-some percent. That's the reality. That is the true truth, and that's the kind of work we do on the group. Is making sure that these are verifiable facts and information. So when we get on here and start, you know, doing our crazy rants, that information is verifiable. I just want to put that out there.
Yeah,
go ahead.
And that's Coalition of Freedom on Facebook. Join the group. Get in the conversation.
It's going to be something zombie.
Coalition of Zombies on Facebook. Please check it out. And while you're on Facebook, please go ahead and like Liberty's Thunder. That's our show page, and you'll get notifications in your newsfeed when we're broadcasting, generally 10 p.m. Eastern Sundays, but every now and then, and hopefully soon we'll do some other special
shows.
Yeah,
don't we have a series we're doing?
Yeah, we got a series that we've been trying to get to, but the zombies keep getting in the way. You know, next week we'll talk a little bit more about, you know, the Fox News, Fox Noise, CNN zombies, things that sound a little like that. But you know, as far as the numbers go, and this is a very important thing to keep in mind. You know, numbers do matter, and people go, oh, yeah, all this economic stuff, does that really matter to people, you know, who are unemployed or looking for work or just got their hours cut from 40 to 29? Yeah, it matters. It matters a lot. I mean, look at it this way, right? The retail numbers for Christmas are barely coming out because they're probably horrible. But some companies are doing extremely well, especially those that build stuff that blows up the rest of the world. They're doing very well. In the Imperial City, which is now the number one market for lobster, champagne, and caviar in the world, it's doing real well. You know, your Starbucks is doing well here. Your old Ebbett Grill is doing well. You know, your little, uptight white clothes from The Gap, that's doing well. You know, all that Chico's, all this stuff's great, right? But you know what's suffering? Family Dollar. and Dollar General. What are those, Rex? Those are what are called dollar stores, even though they're really $1 to $5 stores. In the past, those used to be the five and dime. You go to a five and dime, and for a nickel or 10 cents, you could actually buy well-made American stuff that you needed. Now it's all cheap Chinese crap that costs between $1 and $5. And right now, the number one sector of their product offering that's doing very well is food, because that's the only place people can afford to buy this stuff. But their sales are dropping, which means that what's happening in the zombie economy is the uber wealthy and those connected to Wall Street and the Imperial City, Washington, D.C., are doing great. But the people that are actually in the lower middle class, the poor and soon non-existent middle class, they could barely afford to buy food. That's what the zombie economy does. And whose fault is it? Is it the income inequality that the Republicans have caused? Is it the free market? No. The redistribution of wealth from the poor and the middle class to the uber wealthy is because of the Federal Reserve's devaluation of the dollar through this quantitative easing crap that Janet Yellen, who Obama said was such an economic genius, she's been an executive with the Fed for 10 years. Well, that means that that means that half her tenure as an executive with the Fed is during this quantitative easing crap. And he says that she saw all this stuff coming. Why did she do anything about it?
She didn't see it coming.
She had no clue.
She's a freaking zombie. Clips. Yeah, I have video. Our Schiff had video clips on one of his shows and back before the crash, and she was talking the same bullcrap that Bernanke was talking. Oh, everything's fine, the economy's good, and the housing market's going to keep going up, and, you know, it's all good, and you're all going to be zombies in 5 years after we get this socialist elected.
Yeah. Do you know how you can tell when the central banker is lying? Their lips move.
Their lips move.
All right, folks, we've only got 22 minutes of live air left. Hopefully we're getting this information. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. I just want to – this is something about you as an individual. One is educating yourself. Two, you know, learning some history. Three, learning economics. And get the hell out of debt. It is amazing to me. When you look at go over to China and you look around, you know, and we complain in this country about their wages and all that kind of crap. But, you know, they're putting 30% of their earnings in savings. And I don't know what the new statistics are in Americans with savings accounts, but it's got to be pretty low. But I just want to run this out to you. Just think about this. If you're in debt and you're desperate, then you will vote desperately. It's the same thing with the federal government. If the federal government's in debt and everything's falling apart around them, they're going to make desperate moves. You cannot function in desperation and fear. And let me read these numbers. This is right at the turn of January. Average credit card debt in this country is $15,270. Get rid of it. Average mortgage debt, $149,925. You got to live in a house, so nothing much to say about that. Average student loan debt, $32,258. Now, let me add a point to the student loan debt. In the last 6 or 7 years, student loan debt has increased 95%, and these kids aren't getting jobs. They're getting these, and we could get into the types of educations they're getting, for one. But they're getting these massive debts. The costs are going through the
ceiling. Zombie education.
Because it's government programs interfering in the free market. So then the colleges start ramping up their fees. And so student loan debt in this country total is $1.2 trillion and climbing. And they're not getting freaking jobs. So when you look at these individual things, go ahead.
I'm just saying, they need that student loan debt because no one's buying the other paper debt. So the whole scheme is based on debt. So they got to make people borrow and get you on the hook. And these kids are only getting zombie degrees anyway. And you're right, they're not finding jobs. Youth unemployment is ridiculously high. And these are the kids that voted for Obama back in 2008.
And what's the next big thing coming out of the federal government, Rex?
I believe it has something to do with your retirement plan.
Well, no, amnesty.
amnesty. Oh, you mean increasing the population by making those who are here illegally into citizens?
And making and then it easier for more people to come. You know?
Keeping the border open so that more of them will come. Yeah, well, that's the only way you can grow the population, because you need more debt slaves. If you don't have enough of your own debt slaves, you got to import them. But here's the crazy thing with these kids. Not only are they getting out with zombie degrees and can't find jobs, they're also not signing up for Obamacare. And the whole scheme is based on the younger, healthier people signing up in such large numbers that they pay for those who are consuming the health care, medical costs. They're not signing up. Now, I think Jimmy Kimmel did a bit on it, Chris, where he's
Well,
why would younger, healthier people sign up when you made it so that they could stay on their parents' policies? So what do you think? The kid's going to go, you know what, Mom and Dad, don't worry about it. I got this premium. I'm not going to go buy beer or whatever else, like in Colorado, maybe something green in a baggie. I'm going to pay for my health care premium instead of Mom and Dad paying for it till I'm 26. That's the insanity behind the scheme. What they do is they keep putting out policy after policy that are counterintuitive, that are in conflict, that are not going to grow anything for anybody. And then what they do is they rely on the rhetoric. The Democrats are, the Republicans hate the poor. They're just for big business. And the Democrats are all about
the
poor, really. No.
They hate the minorities. They hate the immigrants. Yeah. They hate the birds. They hate the bees. They hate the air. They hate the water.
And yet the policies, the policies of both zombie parties are exactly the same. But every now and then one of these guys comes out and says something like Ted Cruz or Rand Paul or Mike Lee. You just heard him. You're Ron Paul asking Ben Bernanke, is gold money? And he goes, no, it's not money. Well, then why do you own it?
Oh,
tradition. I mean, come on. This is the kind of insanity. And when someone like – I mean, look, Ron Paul was alone there for a long time. And actually, since the Republicans got rid of Newt Gingrich and they went on a drunken Democrat spending spree, Ron Paul was literally isolated and totally alone as the only – sane voice in the Republican Party. Now you got quite a few more Ron Pauls. You got Rand Paul.
Massey and Amash.
Yeah, Ted Cruz.
Rand.
So we need more, not less. Yep. We need more. But what they're trying to tell you is these are the extremist Tea Party hostage-taking. I mean, and we're going to play it next week on our show when we do a little exposure of the spying and maybe some media lies. But Cuomo, the governor from the People's Republic of New York, was basically saying that if you're a Tea Party, pro-life, pro-gun, anti-gay person, you don't belong in New York. This is how these people think. This is what they're about. And the thing is that, yeah, he's a Democrat. But don't you think for a second that people like Mitch McConnell and John Boehner and Karl Rove don't think exactly the same way? And that's what you
Bush
have
era.
To expose.
Look at the Bush
Which
era.
Which one? The last one, the one before that, or the next one?
The last one, yeah. Well, and I mean, just get the emotion out of it and do the research. It's all there. You can just look at it. You can look at the economy. You can look at the debt ceilings. You can look at the wars. You can look at, the civil rights issues. They broke the records. The Democrats got full control because they just beat the hell out of the Bush economy. And I love, Republicans spending all their time and energy going, well, yeah, but Democrats had control for the last 2 years. And I'm like, you really, really don't understand it, do you? And that's the thing that you got to break. You got to break that my team, their team, and get clear on what the hell has really happened in this country in the last 10, 15 years. And honestly, I don't care what anybody thinks about Newt since Newt left Congress. Because he was in there to reform and change. Was he perfect? No. Do I agree with all of his policies? No. No, I don't. But, man, when he came in with that contract with America, they got things done, and then he got attacked by both parties, because the Republicans were so used to being the tax collectors for the Democrats for 50, 60 years.
Zombie Dole.
Yeah, they just sat in the back. They just, they were backbenchers for decades and decades and decades. And Newt handed them a win, an incredible success, and they couldn't handle the responsibility of it. And that's a sad thing to say, but it's so true. So they pushed him out. Newt finally, retired and said, I've had enough of this crap, and went off into the private market. And there's a lot of history and a lot of lessons there, because if you look at the Republicans from that point forward,
they rolled right back into their, you know, I want to be the tax collectors and the surrender party for the Democrats. And then when Bush came in, they just, Bush too, they act like Democrats. And the country went to hell in a handbasket. And so the Democrats got control of the House, the Senate, and the presidency in 2 years. Look what he did. And then we have this massive uprising, this Tea Party uprising, hand all this success to the Republicans, and then they – I don't know why in the hell they voted Boehner in as Speaker. I had, you know, it's like, can't anybody read? How many lawyers and educated people are in Congress? Look at his damn record, you know, and it's right there. There's the patterns of his vote and the patterns of the things he's backed. Why
I'm
the hell
as conservative as they come.
Speaker?
I'm as conservative as they come.
Yeah, maybe in conservative in Italy or something like that, or France. But, you know, and that's the thing is, yeah, or a zombie. And that's where we're sitting right now, is we are sitting at a pinnacle, at a tipping point. And there's a lot. There would not be the attacks that we're seeing on conservatives and Tea Party type people if they weren't scared. That's what you have to realize. You can't look at this thing like, oh, my God. I mean, we just threw a lot of overwhelming crap on people. And I get it. It can be overwhelming. It can be depressing. But the real positive point is they wouldn't be attacking this hard if they weren't scared. This power struggle, this arc, the pendulum arc, when you're going from, you know, socialism back to conservatism, is swinging back. People are going, okay, well, we tried it that way. It didn't work. Then we tried it this guy's way, Mr. Hope and Change. Holy crap, you know, Stalin too. You know, and now people are starting to come back going, we want our damn country back. I want my freedom back. I don't want to be spied on. I don't want, you know, we've had how many tax increases? And you got to understand this about, we didn't get into the details of this, but you had the tax deal that the Republicans folded on. You also had seven taxes that they just kind of go away.
They expired.
You know, they have like a timeline. Yeah, they expired, so there's seven taxes there. All the Obamacare taxes. It's huge, folks. You didn't just get a 2% increase. It hasn't all hit yet. Next year,
that's the whole
when
point.
You pay your damn taxes, you're going to go, what just happened to me? And all the policies that are going on, from spending to Obamacare to increase in Medicaid, Medicare, and all this crap and bailing out, you know, these promise zones, bailing out all these countries, the next war, whatever they do, there's no reform going on, so it's going to increase that pile. Well, when they make bad mistakes, what do they always do? This is a trick question, or not? They always increase taxes. So it's coming again and again and again. You guys, now you younger people have never seen taxes. You know, when my dad was a young man with a family, taxes were incredible in this country. Of course, they had a lot more write-offs in those days, but they're taking away the write-offs and increasing taxes. You know, that concept of work until you die is not just a trick terminology. Go ahead, Rex.
Well,
got a video?
Well, yeah, we'll get into Schiff in a second because he actually talks about this stuff. But look, you're right about the fact that people are reacting to this rapid road to serfdom increase we've seen pretty much since Newt left the House. It was accelerated rapidly during the Bush years with compassionate conservatism, and then, of course, Hopi Changey tripled down on what Bush did. But as people move the other way towards sanity, more conservative, more libertarian, the problem is that that's what the Republicans count on, the controlled opposition, the false left-right paradigm, the Hegelian dialectic. They're counting on your reaction to what the Democrats and Obama have been doing, that you will just vote for anybody but Obama and elect rhinos who will do the same thing, although they might favor different groups. But it'll be the same thing, and the Fed machine and the zombie economy rolls on, but people feel better because they've got the rhetoric that they like to hear being spewed out of Washington. That's what you have to break. And when I say you have to break it, if you're listening to the show, if somebody emailed you an MP3, if somebody gave you a CD, if somebody sent you a link to our Blog Talk Radio page or Liberty's Thunder page on Facebook and you heard this, then you've got to go out and get – 10 other people to understand the same concept. You can't just hand the Republicans victory after victory and hope that they'll act conservative. You have to work the details at your local level and get actual conservatives and libertarians elected. People like Justin Amash, people like Trey Gowdy. Joe Miller's fighting for his life up in Alaska.
Alaska.
To unseat that mess. You know, you've got to help these people out. Because if you don't do it, the big money, the corporations, the media, the party machines are not supporting these independent thinking guys. They are only supporting party line rhinos. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I honestly haven't lived half my life in Alaska. I could not understand how they voted. It surprises me, but it doesn't surprise me living in Alaska. But, you know, how they got Democrats elected in the Senate up there, I just blew me away. Because I get guys posting, you know, Joe's talks on Tuesday nights up there in Alaska. I'm thinking, what the hell did you guys do when I left? You know? You need to support these people all over the country. And, there's different kinds of support. There's financial support. Do you know people in that state? Can you get education material? You know, do a little research if you got friends or family in that state. Do some research. Get some information out on these people that are running that have fiscal responsibility in their primary platform. You can't let this one go. And this is a frustrating thing about America. And you said this at the beginning of the show. 114 million people didn't vote in 2012. 114 million people of the people who are voting, legal voting age. And I'm sure a lot of illegal people voted. But that being said, and that's, you know, 56%, I believe, 56, 57% voted in the election. Typically a midterm, an off-season election, you've got 36, 37, 37.8 was high in 2010. That's it. So, you know, if you got 2% more people to get off their butt and go vote and support these people, we'd have a record win in the House, the Senate, and at the state level. You know, your state's just as important, because if it wasn't for these you guys who are into nullification and Article 5 and all this, you know, 10th Amendment and all this stuff, you know, if you don't have a conservative House, Senate, and governor in a state, you ain't going to get no nullification. You know,
yeah.
And I love the conversation. It's an important conversation to have because state sovereignty is huge. It's been abused so bad in this country. And you know, we're a republic for a reason. Right now, what you're living right now in this country is why we were a republic. It's why our founding fathers put the country together the way they put it together. That's a whole nother conversation. But it gradually, over the years, you know, and here's another point. The EPA. You don't like Agenda 21. Well, guess who gave us the EPA? A Republican.
Nixon.
Guess who took us off the
that
gold
zombie.
Standard? A Republican.
Zombie.
Nixon. You know, you've got to wake up to the reality. We've been here before. And like I said earlier, a lot of times we look at our paradigm of how we view our politics or our foundational beliefs. And we think about the Reagan era. Well, there's been a lot of different Republican eras, and a lot of them weren't so good. In fact, the original party, and you had a great article on this that I like to post every once in a while, you know, the early stages of the Republican Party was a corporatist party. It was big government. You know, it was the railroad guys and the industrial guys.
Just like the Whigs.
You know, Wheeling. Yeah. And it wasn't this, you know, Ron Paul, Rand Paul, Newt Gingrich, Ronald Reagan party. You know, that's the smaller percentage of time in our history. So you have to fight for that because the people, what I call the Rockefeller Republicans, you know, the Romneys and the Roves and the rest of these, you know, so-called moderates, you know,
zombies.
Basically zombie Democrats posing as Republicans, you know. And so if you want that other dynamic, you have to work for it. It will not happen just because you listen to the show or run around Facebook and post the article of the day of the thing that Obama did today. You know, you've got to educate yourself and get out there. And, you know, if everybody got 10 people to get up and go vote, we would change the direction of our country. We wouldn't change our country in this first vote but we would change the direction that we're going. 2016 would be another major point. You know, 2, 3, 4% increase is all it takes. I mean, yep. Obama won no. with 3.6 million less votes than he did the first time. But look what we ran against him.
Rogue monster. Mitt Zombie. And speaking of Mitt Zombie, please just go away, Mitt. Just go away. All right, we got 4 minutes of live show left, and then we're going to spill into overtime. If you want to keep listening now, you got to call in and listen on your phone, 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. We're probably going to go about 15, 20 minutes into overtime, and then I've got about a 30-minute clip I'm going to play for closing. But before we bring our final thoughts on, why don't we listen to somebody who knows economics? He's an Austrian. Actually, he's from Connecticut, but his economics are Austrian, and that just doesn't really mean anything about Austria. That's just the name of the school. And if you want to learn about Austrian economics, please check out Mises.org, M-I-S-E-S.org. That's the Ludwig von Mises Institute. Learn it. There's a lot of libertarian stuff on there. If you're a conservative, some of it may be unappealing, but the economics is pretty solid. So we'll listen to Schiff a little bit because he can actually put this in perspective. And the most important thing to remember is this is a zombie economy. It will continue to be a zombie economy. And whatever the issue that's important to you, whether it's state sovereignty, pro-life, religious freedom, keeping a couple of shekels in your pocket,
the money I earn.
Yeah, whatever it is, none of it is going to matter if this zombie economy persists because we're all going to be so desperate looking for clean water and food that it literally will be a zombie apocalypse. So that's why this is an important
issue. But it
couldn't
happen here, Rex.
Yeah, right. It's happened. Hey, let me break it to you, Trog. It's already happened. The only question now is how quickly can we actually recover? Down this path is a managed decline and the end of the republic. But if you start turning it around this year, if you start turning it around this moment, if you do three things every day, who did you touch? Who did you explain something to? Who did you support? And don't send any money to the parties. Send it to the individual, conservative, and libertarian candidates only. Then that's how you're going to right the ship. All right, you got less than a minute to call in, 646-649-1013. This is 8 minutes with Peter Schiff, and Chris and I will be back for 5 minutes on the other side, and then we'll play a closing clip. Here's Peter Schiff. Schiff happens.
Earlier this morning, Wall Street waited with bated breath, anticipating a robust December jobs report. After all, it was going to validate their belief in the strength of the so-called recovery. The official estimate was 200,000 jobs being created, but most on Wall Street were more optimistic than that. Numbers of 250,000 or more were being bandied about with a lot of confidence. And when the official number came out, it was just 74,000 jobs created. That's the lowest in more than 3 years. And in fact, if you actually look at those 74,000 jobs, better than half of them were actually temporary jobs. In fact, for all the talk about the job creation and the economic recovery in 2013, the U.S. economy actually added fewer jobs in 2013 than it did in 2012. Also, the unemployment rate did tick down from 7% to 6.7%, but that's not good news either. It didn't go down because the unemployed found jobs. No, it went down because the unemployed stopped looking. They threw in the towel and they left the labor force. Hundreds of thousands of Americans left the labor force. The labor force participation rate is now at a new low for this period. It's as low as it was back in 1978, and of course back then women were just entering the labor force, so it's actually much worse today than it was in 1978. And I think the labor force participation rate is actually being exaggerated by the number of people currently collecting unemployment and extended unemployment benefits, because after all, in order to qualify for the unemployment benefits, you have to pretend that you're looking for a job.
A lot of
these numbers are just temporary. And of course, all this positive data is a direct byproduct of the very quantitative easing that everybody expects the Fed to taper. So if the Fed were to follow through with those threats, then that positive data would disappear and the U.S. economy would be right back in recession. So as far as I'm concerned, this number is valid. It isn't an outlier. And we'll see what happens a month from now, whether or not it is revised upward, or who knows. We might have a further revision
monetary
downward.
Policies pursued
now,
by
Bernanke were far more reckless than the ones pursued by Greenspan. And therefore, the bubble is much bigger. And therefore, the damage to the economy when it pops will be much bigger. So just like it hit the fan when Bernanke was at the Fed, it's going to do the same thing on Janet Yellen's watch. We're going to have another crisis early in the Yellen term that will be bigger than the crisis that we had early in the Bernanke term, and Wall Street and the government are equally as prepared. They will be equally blindsided. In fact, I think they will be blindsided even more, because if you go back to the Greenspan period, there were more doubters. There were more people like me back in 2004, 5, 6, 7, who were critical of Alan Greenspan and who were expressing that criticism or that skepticism by buying gold and doing various things to hedge themselves against inflation. There's not that many of us left. There were some critics of Ben Bernanke early on. And as gold, you know, went up to 1900 a couple of years ago, yes, critics were buying gold and anticipating problems in inflation. No more. Most of those voices have been silenced. In the last year or so, the doubters have become believers. Everybody is cheerleading Bernanke and welcoming Janet Yellen into the Fed, anticipating nothing but sunny skies ahead. Nobody really understands that all of the problems that they believe Ben Bernanke solved, he simply exacerbated. The U.S. economy is in worse shape than it was when the financial crisis started. We have bigger problems, and therefore the next financial crisis will be worse. The thing that is going to be different about the next crisis is I believe it's going to be a currency crisis. If you recall, the dollar had been weakening until the 2008 financial crisis. In fact, when the crisis began, the dollar was near record lows across the board. And the crisis actually began a rally in the dollar. So the dollar's decline stopped when the crisis broke out. And that's because I think a lot of people still anticipated that the Fed would do the right thing. There'd be lots of bank failures and losses, and all of this would contract the economy. And so asset prices were going down, including the price of gold. I think the Fed believes it's learned from the mistakes that it thinks it made in 08. And so next time around, there's no more Lehman Brothers. Nobody is going to be allowed to fail, and no one is even going to worry about the possibility of a bank failing, because they know that the backstop is complete, that Janet Yellen will simply print whatever it takes, that there is no limit. See, back in 2008, nobody even knew about quantitative easing yet. The Fed hadn't even, you know, taken that tool out of its box, right? We all know now that it's there, that that crutch is there for the Fed to rely on. So this is going to be a different crisis. Instead of being the end of the dollar's decline, the next crisis will be the beginning of the dollar's collapse. And I will anticipate that the dollar will continue to weaken until that crisis starts. Because as 2014 unfolds, we're going to get more data like the December jobs data that is going to disappoint and call into question the validity of this recovery, which I believe is an illusion, not a reality. And that's why we don't get real jobs. See, a phony recovery doesn't create real jobs. And the problem is the monetary policy that is required to keep this illusion of recovery going is the exact policy that is preventing a real recovery. So the question is, when will the markets wake up to this reality and begin to price this in, particularly to the dollar and to the price of gold, you know, which has been falling now for the last 6-7 months or last year in particular, on this false belief that we have a legitimate recovery and that the Fed can remove the monetary stimulus and the recovery is going to continue. But again, the Fed is pretending that it has an exit strategy, just like people who are collecting unemployment checks are pretending to be looking for work. They have no real exit strategy because it is impossible to do without unraveling the phony economy that is completely dependent on the continuation and on the expansion
less
stimulus
that
the economy is going to have, but more. And that the economy needs this stimulus forever. Everybody is talking about a real U.S. recovery, and that's where the optimism is coming from. That optimism in the dollar is based on the fact that people believe the Fed can tighten
QE.
How they can
believe
that, we really need it. That's the last thing we need if we want a real recovery. But if we want to maintain the illusion of recovery, that's all we need. But eventually, like all illusions, it will fade. Reality is going to rear its head. And I think what is going to bring that about is going to be a currency crisis. It's going to be that collapse of the dollar that finally forces the Fed to do the right thing, which it should have done years ago. But again, because it waited so long, it's going to be that much more painful.
A phony recovery doesn't create real jobs. Now, that sounds pretty dismal, and we've been talking about a zombie economy, and that's exactly what it is. And he talked about the false optimism coming from the lies. But the fact is that this is actually time to be very optimistic. I mean, you have several choices. You can just, you know, stockpile food and weapons and hide in your bunker and start shooting zombies in the head when it all collapses. Or you can just go along and pretend that the left-right thing exists. There is no left-right. It's tyranny versus liberty, period. It's us versus the banks. That's what it comes down to. So why be optimistic? Well, because the zombies in America are waking up. See, sometimes it takes a zombie a real swift kick in the shorts to wake up. And that kick is here. It's happening now. But see, some people can't see it because of normalcy bias. Some people get confused and they just react by running to the other party. It's your job to teach them, to touch them personally, to educate them. Don't just post stuff back and forth to each other on Facebook. You know, it's good to support each other, but you got to broaden the circle. You got to create a force multiplier and get those other unwashed masses, the zombies, awaken and involved. Now is the time to do that because the contrast is there, and there's going to be a financial crisis within the current zombie financial crisis that we're in very, very soon. Don't miss that opportunity to prepare people for it and get them involved then and there so that we can actually have some real conservatives and real libertarians in government to undo most of this crap that's been done over the past century of madness. Right, Chris?
Yes, sir.
The zombies got him. Okay. I thought the zombies got you.
No, I was on mute.
All right. Well, we're almost out of time. We got a 30-minute clip at the end, which has basically a lot of the clips we've already played kind of lumped in together. And one of the reasons we play a lot of clips here, I know you call in to hear Chris and I put in perspective for you, but we play these clips because this is stuff that you may have not heard, or it's stuff you may have heard, but it wasn't put in the right context because the news media flips it about on you. We put it together so you can hear it in their own words, the good guys, the bad guys, and the zombies, so you can teach people how to get involved. So we'll go to you for a commentary on Schiff and your final thoughts.
Well, I really like Schiff, and it's one of those things that if you study and listen and you stay on top of it, he makes a lot of sense. And that goes back to that educational component. You've got to make a decision that you're going to get educated. It's amazing how many people don't understand basic economics, and you don't have to have a degree in it like Justin Amash or, you know, be a world trader like Peter Schiff or whatever. But, you know, part of learning is to surround yourself with people who have expertise and learn a little bit at a time. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, why, I mean, we ask ourselves all the time, you know, why do we do this show? But it's to educate people. You know, there's things that we're knowledgeable about. There's things that you're an expert about, things that I'm really big on. And we do our research, and then we try to compile it and simplify it, put the information out there, and then to link you up with the resource. Like if you go to the the show page, you know, and where you post the show, you have all the, you know, all the articles and videos and whatever that we talked about on the show. And it's the same thing I do in the group. We just expand it in more conversations about more things. You know, like for me, I don't talk about it that much. We have little bits and pieces of it, but I'm really big on keeping an eye on what's going on around the world, because it is impacting us, and the decisions that our government is making are hurting us around the world, and that's another whole other economic conversation, you know, because us being the U.S. trade dollar, the petrodollar, whatever you want to call it, you know, in China, Russia, and India, and Brazil, and all the rest of them, there's a whole conversation there, and we have talked about it in the past on past shows, you know, and so education's everything, you know, knowledge is power. I can't remember what Ryan said, but I chuckled when he was talking about, you know, the power of, I don't know what he was saying, but it was just like a bunch of bull crap, you know, but knowledge is power, but it has to be good knowledge. And we live in this modern era with the internet and the social media, and it just, you know, there's so much information flies at people all the time that it can be overwhelming, or it can be confusing, or people aren't checking their sources, and then you get an idea in your head based on something you read on one of your groups that you belong to, and you're wrong. And you need to make sure that you plugged into areas where you get good information with viable sources. That's the key. I remember when, you know, Dr. Paul has been, you know, this lone voice about the Fed forever, you know, his whole career, and he's been minimized and insulted, and, you know, basically, you know, he'd be like running second in the polls and they wouldn't even mention his name in some of these states. I mean, it's just disgusting what these people do, but they're all part of, you know, creating that wealth and managing the decline. And there's a lot of money to be made in socialism. There's a lot of money to be made in bleeding the country dry. You know, Russia, when Russia fell, you know, it was a big country. And it had a lot of natural resources, a lot of factories and things like that. And, you know, economically, it got bled dry. Trillions of dollars disappeared out of Russia. You know, one of the first things they had to do was plug the leaks and before they could rebuild their country. And that's what, for the last 20 years, that's what they've been doing, is rebuilding the country. And it's an amazing research project. If you really want to learn about how a country is coming back from absolute communist, corporatist, fascism, corruption, and rebuilt itself, and now is the number one economy in Europe, and, you know, what they're doing. And it's not, you know, like praising Putin or praising Russia. It's an educational process to realize, you know, they flat taxed everything. They dropped corporate taxes. They expanded their natural resources. They, you know, they drilled. They, you know, they got busy. Did they have a long ways to go? Yeah. But, you know, here's the problem with being number one, which we're not anymore. We're number 12 on the Freedom Index, is when you're on the top, you got a long ways to fall. And the problem with being on the top for as many years as the U.S. has, people are fat and lazy. And they're all caught up in their damn technology and their games and American Idol and football playoffs, and things are falling apart around them, and they don't even know what the hell is going on. And that's the sad part about it, is because, as Franklin said when they came out of the meeting, what kind of government, sir, what kind of government did you give us? And he said, a republic, if you can hold on to it. And that's the bottom line, because it's a citizen driven government. And if you're just a subject living your life, you know, not understanding the economy, not understanding, you know, some basic things about politics, living your life, you're just part of the problem. And I, you know, I don't want people to take me wrong when I say that stuff, but, you know, it's wake the hell up. I wasn't into federal politics because for most of my life, it was me and my state, you know, but in the last 20 years, it's gotten really bad. And so it ain't going to get better, and it's not going to self-correct. These people are a bunch of, I don't know, for lack of a better word, they're a bunch of zombie criminals. They're bought and paid for by the banks and the lobbyists and the special interest groups, and they don't give a crap about you except they want your donations and your vote. And shut up and pay your taxes. And that is not being a citizen. So anyway, I think we had a great show tonight, and I hope people, you know, garnered a lot from it. To you.
All right. Good stuff, Chris. And you can check out Chris's research, which he does right in front of your eyes, on Coalition of Freedom on Facebook. Join the group and help it grow. And thank you for sharing the show and getting it out there. Please like our page on Facebook, Liberty's Thunder, and check out all of our past shows on Blog Talk Radio. Search out Liberty's Thunder. All the shows are there for you to listen to in your browser and share, and it costs you nothing. The only thing we ask in return is get this information out there, because there are zombies. Most of them are in government or in banks, but a lot of them are your neighbors. They're in your churches. They're in your schools. They're in your place of work. They're in your businesses. Get them unzombied. Make the undead live. Get them involved. Real briefly, just before we go to final closing, and I've got, like I said, a 30-minute clip for you to enjoy. On another subject, today is Sanctity of Life Sunday. And we're talking about not the undead, but actual dead innocents. For 41 years, we've been slaughtering the most innocent among us. And whether or not you're pro-life, you know, everybody's got their own opinion about everything. But the simple fact is that our Declaration of Independence says life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Without liberty, you can't pursue happiness. And without life, you can't have liberty. If our government isn't designed to protect individual rights, then it's not a government. It's an overlord. And this week on Wednesday, January 22nd, the March for Life will take place. 650,000 people, most of them very young, will march on Washington on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. You won't hear about it in the media. You'll hear about the 12 pro-abortion people that are there, but you won't hear about the 650,000 people who show up. And that's a big problem, because the media is controlled by the same people that have brought you the zombie economy. We're going to talk about that next week, so make sure that you listen in at 10 p.m. Sunday. What you really want to take away from this is that we really are a throwaway culture. You know, we sound bites, tweets, you know, it's a zombie culture. And when you have a zombie culture, that gap that you've created in your society and your culture because of lack of personal responsibility will be filled in by government. And it'll be an oppressive government that controls you. It might feed you. It might provide you with some modicum of health care as long as it doesn't cost too much. But it won't let you be free. And that's what America is about. It's not a country for zombies. This is a country for people who love liberty and pull themselves up by the bootstraps and help their neighbor out and do the work that they're doing. If you want that country back, if you want it to really be America again, now is the time to do it. This zombie economy, as horrible as it is, and people are hungry, people are out of work, people are dying, this is the opportunity you have to show the contrast of what America, with a free market, with an ordered government that is limited by its constitutional constraints, and where the people are free, virtuous, and responsible. You have to do the heavy lifting. You have to do the work. We hope we're bringing you information that helps you understand what's going on and that empowers you to get other people involved and awake. Because if you're not involved in the electoral process, if you're not involved in creating a restoration of 1776 right here, right now, the whole thing is going to die. It'll be undead, and we'll all be in big trouble. But get excited. This is the chance. This is the moment where we can turn it around, where we can unzombify it, where we can turn it from an undead economy and an undead country into a vibrant republic with a strong economy and liberty and justice for all. It is up to you. You have to do the work, and we're proud to stand shoulder to shoulder with all of you patriots and bring this country back to the glorious republic that it can be. See you next week. We're not zombies. This is Rex and Trog signing off.
And the thunder of liberty rumbles on.
At the beginning of the 21st century, the Umbrella Corporation had become the largest commercial entity in the United States.
9 out of every 10 homes contain its products. Its political and financial influence is felt everywhere. In public, it is the world's leading supplier of computer technology, medical products, and healthcare. Unknown even to its own employees, its massive profits are generated by military technology, genetic experimentation, and viral weaponry.
Seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
Mr. President, just a brief comment on my friend, the Republican leader's statement. He continues bad-mouthing the recovery. We are in a recovery
to help the economy. Democrats won't stand for a budget that weakens it.
The Republican leadership has a Tea Party screaming so loudly in its right ear that it can't hear what the vast majority of the country demands. The country demands that we get this done. As I've said before, the biggest gap in these negotiations isn't between Democrats and Republicans. It's between Republicans and Republicans. So the Speaker has a choice to make, and not much time to make it. He can either do what the Tea Party wants or what the country needs.
This is foolishness. We have people that are desperate. They've been out of work for some as much as 2 years. We have reduced the debt by $3 trillion. Let's start helping the middle class. Let's start helping the poor. The rich are getting richer. The poor are getting poorer. The middle class is being squeezed out of existence. They have to figure out some other message than one that doesn't agree with the American people. The American people want unemployment benefits extended. That's it. Let them agree with the American people.
Recovery. We are in
we
recovery.
We are here to have a budget that has revenue coming in, that has investments made into the future. We also want to make decisions in those two areas where growth with jobs are created, because more jobs, more revenue coming in. Nothing brings more money to the Treasury of the United States than investment in education of the American people. So we have to recognize that. Which cuts really help us and which cuts hurt our future? And cuts in education, scientific research, and the rest are harmful, and they are what are affected by the sequestration. So it is almost a false argument to say we have a spending problem. We have a budget deficit problem that we have to address. Right now we have low interest on the national debt, and it's a good time for us to act to lower that deficit. We think the deficit and the national debt are at immoral levels. They must be reduced. We're sick and tired of paying interest on the national debt, and that's 15%.
But I also want to announce my choice for the next chair of the Federal Reserve. One of the nation's foremost economists and policymakers, current vice chairman, Janet Yellen. She is a proven leader, and she's tough, not just because she's from Brooklyn. Janet is exceptionally well qualified for this role. She served in leadership positions at the Fed for more than a decade. As vice chair for the past 3 years, she's been exemplary and a driving force of policies to help boost our economic recovery. You know, Janet is renowned for her good judgment. She sounded the alarm early about the housing bubble, about excesses in the financial sector, and about the risks of a major recession. She doesn't have a crystal ball, but what she does have is a keen understanding about how markets and the economy work, not just in theory, but also in the real world.
I'm honored and humbled by the faith that you've placed in me. If confirmed by the Senate, I pledge to do my utmost to keep that trust and meet the great responsibilities that Congress has entrusted to the Federal Reserve to promote maximum employment, stable prices, and a strong and stable financial system.
We do what we can to promote a very strong recovery. We're doing that by continuing our asset purchase program, which we put in place with the goal of assuring a substantial improvement in the outlook for the labor market. And the message that we want to send is that we will do what is in our power to assure a robust recovery in the context of support, transparency, and openness on the part of the Fed. And I think with respect to monetary policy, in terms of the range of information and the timeliness of that information, we are one of the most transparent central banks in the world. What I would not support is a requirement that any requirement that would diminish the independence of the Federal Reserve in implementing and deciding on implementing in monetary policy. For 50 years, Congress has recognized that there should be an exception to GAO ability to audit the Fed to avoid any political interference in monetary policy. I believe it's critically important to the economic performance of this country, and we've seen this around the world, that allowing a central bank to be independent in formulating monetary policy is critical to assuring markets and the public that we will achieve price stability. And I would be very concerned about legislation that would subject the Federal Reserve to short-term political pressures.
The Federal Reserve is using its monetary policy tools to promote a more robust recovery. A strong recovery will ultimately enable the Fed to reduce its monetary accommodation and its reliance on unconventional policy tools such as asset purchases. I believe that supporting the recovery today is the surest path to returning to a more normal
approach
to monetary policy. Starting
next month, to modestly reduce the pace at which it is increasing the size of the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. The committee also clarified its guidance on interest rates, emphasizing that the current near zero range for the federal funds rate target likely will remain appropriate well past the time that the unemployment rate declines below 6.5%. Especially if projected inflation continues to run below the committee's 2% longer-run goal. Today's policy actions reflect the committee's assessment that the economy is continuing to make progress, but that it also has much farther to travel before conditions can be judged normal. Notably, despite significant fiscal headwinds, the economy has been expanding at a moderate pace, and we expect that growth will pick up somewhat in coming quarters, helped by highly accommodative monetary policy and waning fiscal drag. The job market has continued to improve, with the unemployment rate having declined further. At the same time, the recovery clearly remains far from complete, with unemployment still elevated and with both underemployment and long-term unemployment still major concerns.
The growth in the first quarter was supported by continuing expansion in demand by U.S. households and businesses, which more than offset the drag from declines in government spending, especially defense spending. Despite this improvement, the job market remains weak overall. The unemployment rate is still well above its longer-run normal level. Rates of long-term unemployment are historically high, and the labor force participation rate.
The reason the Federal Reserve was founded a century ago was to try to address the problems arising from financial panics, which did, by the way, occur in an unregulated environment in the 19th century. We provided liquidity and short-term loans to help financial system stabilize. We did that not because we particularly care about the managers or the shareholders of financial firms.
I hate to interrupt, but my time is about up. But I would like to suggest that you say it's not spending money. Well, it's money out of thin air. You put it into the market, and you hold assets, and the assets aren't, you know, they are diminishing in value when you buy up bad assets. But very quickly, if you could answer another question, because I'm curious about this. You know, the price of gold today is $1,580. The dollar during these last 3 years was devalued almost 50%. When you wake up in the morning, do you care about the price of gold?
Well, I pay attention to the price of gold, but I think it reflects a lot of things. It reflects global uncertainties. I think the reason people hold gold is as a protection against what we call tail risk, really, really bad outcomes. And to the extent that the last few years have made people more worried about the potential of a major crisis, then they have gold as a protection.
Do you think gold is money?
No.
It's not money.
Even if it had been money
for 6,000 years, somebody reversed that and eliminated that economic law.
Well, it's an asset. I mean, it's the same. Would you say treasury bills are money? I don't think they're money either, but they're a financial asset.
Why do central banks hold it?
Well, it's a form of reserves.
Why don't they hold diamonds?
Well, it's tradition, long-term tradition.
Some people still think it's money.
I yield back my time. Strides in the last year under my chairmanship to expand the information that we release. We release monthly information on all the various programs that we have. We've developed a website and a monthly report that involves all kinds of information. We think we are quite transparent. We are happy to work with Congress if they have further concerns about any of our programs. We are more than happy to work with you to make sure that you're comfortable, that they are well managed and are serving a public purpose.
Do you think it would cause problems for the Fed or for the economy if that legislation was to pass?
My concern about the legislation is that if the GAO is auditing not only the operational aspects of our programs and the details of the programs, but is making judgments about our policy decisions, that would effectively be a takeover of monetary policy by the Congress, a repudiation of the independence of the Federal Reserve, which would be highly destructive to the stability of the financial system, the dollar, and
what you just said,
our national economic situation.
Is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
From the right and from the left, you know, I came here to fight for a smaller, less costly, more accountable federal government. And this budget agreement takes giant steps in the right direction. It's not everything I wanted. But when groups come out and criticize an agreement that they've never seen, you begin to wonder just how credible those actions are. And so yesterday when the criticism was coming, frankly, I thought it was my job and my obligation to stand up for conservatives here in the Congress who want more deficit reduction, stand up for the work that Chairman Ryan did. He did good work on behalf of the American people. Listen, this bill, this budget bill, gets us more deficit reduction than what we have under the Budget Control Act. I came here to cut the size of government. That's exactly what this bill does. And why conservatives wouldn't vote for this or criticize the bill is beyond any recognition I could come up with. Well, frankly, I think they're misleading their followers. I think they're pushing our members in places where they don't want to be. And frankly, I just think that they've lost all credibility. You know, well, they pushed us into this fight to defund Obamacare and to shut down the government. Most of you know, my members know, that wasn't exactly the strategy that I had in mind.
Legislation giving the president the authority to request of us an increase in the debt ceiling that would take us past the end of his term. That is what he has said. He said he will not sign a debt ceiling that does not take us past the end of his term. In this legislation, if it were to pass, he would make three separate requests of us. The first request would be initiated by passing the legislation in the next few weeks. He would send up a request of us to raise the debt ceiling probably by $700 billion. That would be subject to a resolution of disapproval. If you're thinking of an analogy, think of the Congressional Review Act. That resolution of disapproval, if passed, would then go to the president. He could sign it, or he could veto it. Presumably, he would veto it. If that were the case, that veto would be sustained by one-third plus one in either the House or the Senate. The legislation also would require him to list, would not implement these cuts unilaterally, but would require him to list spending cuts he would make in the same amount as the debt ceiling request he's making of us. Then there would be a second request based upon his desire to have enough debt ceiling to get him through the end of his term. There'd be a second request in all likelihood to pass legislation giving the president the authority to request of us an increase in the debt ceiling that would take us past the end of his term. That is what he has said. He said he will not sign a debt ceiling that does not take us past the end of his term. In this legislation, if it were to pass, he would make three separate requests of us. The first request would be initiated by passing the legislation in the next few weeks. He would send up a request of us to raise the debt ceiling probably by $700 billion. That would be subject to a resolution of disapproval. If you're thinking of an analogy, think of the Congressional Review Act. That resolution of disapproval, if passed, would then go to the president. He could sign it, or he could veto it. Presumably, he would veto it. If that were the case, that veto would be sustained by one-third plus one in either the House or the Senate. The legislation also would require him to list, would not implement these cuts unilaterally, but would require him to list spending cuts he would make in the same amount as the debt ceiling request he's making of us. Then there would be a second request based upon his desire to have enough debt ceiling to get him through the end of his term. There'd be a second request in all likelihood in the fall.
The idea of a government shutdown in January and then in the idea of another possible government shutdown in October, and getting rid of that, I think, is good.
Except the last show is for me to jump all over you guys.
Yeah, but I think there are a lot of people who would like the distraction of government shutdown for one reason or another. I think the administration is not really high on the Obamacare focus that is occurring in this country because
the
law
like
is completely unraveling.
Do you think they like the shutdown?
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't say that they like shutdowns, but I think they'd like to get off Obamacare. And by not shutting the government down, we're not going to get off Obamacare. We're going to keep doing our oversight. We're going to keep speaking truth to power. We're going to keep shining the light on these problems of the law, and that to us gives us a good position. The last point I'll make is this retains the power of the purse in Congress. The legislative branch, Congress, we are supposed to set spending. We're supposed to prioritize funding. We are supposed to exercise the power of the purse. For the last 3 years, we've been doing these things called continuing resolutions where we delegate that power to the executive branch.
Everybody dies. Trouble was, they didn't stay dead.
They're everywhere.
I was the only one immune to the T-virus.
The genetic structure is the key.
when the virus began to spread.
Seal the gates.
Umbrella eradicated Raccoon City. My home. I tried to escape, but I was captured and experimented on. I became different. Powerful. Unstoppable. As I got stronger, the human race became weaker.
Pretty soon there'll be more of us dead than alive.
Good thing we like a challenge. Umbrella used my DNA to develop an army of clones. Big mistake.
Hey, boys.
And both sides, Republicans and Democrats, are ignoring the facts. China, when they downgraded us, said it, and you cannot escape this fact. The growth of government borrowing has largely outpaced overall economic growth and fiscal revenues. It was sad when the Chinese government can see major economic problems for us that Washington continues to ignore. At current interest rates, we pay about $237 billion in interest payments. If interest rates rise by 1%, interest spending will increase by $1.2 trillion. If interest rates return to the norms of the 1980s, the taxpayer will be on the hook for an additional $6.17 trillion. If interest rates go to 10%, Katie, bar the door. The panic will be upon us.
To the deal that the Senate is getting ready to vote on. This is a terrible deal. This deal embodies everything about the Washington establishment that frustrates the American people. This deal kicks the can down the road. It allows yet more debt, more deficits, more spending, and it does absolutely nothing to provide relief for the millions of Americans who are hurting because of Obamacare. To all the young people right now coming out of school who can't find a job because of Obamacare, this deal does nothing for them. To all of the single moms who are struggling and being forced into part-time work, trying to feed their kids on 29 hours a week because of Obamacare, this deal does nothing for them. To all of the hard-working families who are right now getting massive premium increases from their health insurance companies and trying to figure out how they're going to make ends meet with health insurance going up 100, 200, 300% because of Obamacare, this deal does nothing for them. And to all of the seniors, to all of the people with disabilities who are right now getting in the mail notifications that they're losing their health insurance because of Obamacare, this deal does nothing for them. Mr. President, this fight was always about the American people who are hurting because of Obamacare.
Will be lost, but it can come quickly. Resorting to buying other paper currencies will not be of much help. When the dollar crashes, most likely the purchasing power of all currencies, since all currencies hold dollars as a reserve, will go down as well. This means that dollars and other currencies will go into buying consumer items, precious metals, and other physical properties. Consumer prices will soar as well as interest rates. The central bank will lose control, and the more they inflate, the worse the confidence becomes. The interest rates will respond to these efforts by rising sharply. If the Fed tries to reverse the run on the dollar, interest rates will also soar, and the pain on the American citizens will be of such proportion that political chaos will result. Either scenario leads to political and social chaos, the third event, and the most dangerous. With no ability of the federal government to fund its commitments, international or domestic, major changes will occur in our system. The social unrest will elicit cries for government to exert unusual force to head off a complete breakdown of law and order. The ultimate trap will be set for a system of government claiming to protect a free society. If more power and police authority are not given to the federal government, it will be argued that only anarchy will result. If more government policing power is given, It will mean a lethal threat to civil liberties.
The Federal Reserve printing all this money that's enabling the government to finance these huge deficits, and it's preventing the economy from restructuring. You know, in his speech this morning, Ben Bernanke talked about structural unemployment. Well, the structural unemployment is the result of interest rates being too low. And the fact that rates are too low, we're not saving enough, we're not investing enough, we're consuming too much, government is spending too much, and all of this has the economy out of balance. And until it restructures, we're not going to create lasting productive jobs. Yeah, well, that's why the Fed didn't ask the banks to stress test a big drop in the bond market, because that's what's coming, and the banks would fail that. But, you know, you've got Ben Bernanke. Look at what he said last week. On Thursday, he gave a lecture to students at George Washington University, and he basically absolved the Federal Reserve of any responsibility for the housing bubble. He basically said that interest rates have nothing to do with housing prices, which is absurd, because right now the Fed is keeping interest rates artificially low because Bernanke is trying to prop up the housing market. He's trying to prevent housing prices from falling. So how is it that interest rates affect home prices now, but they didn't do it when the Fed was inflating the housing bubble? I mean, either Ben Bernanke is lying or he's incompetent. Well, the substance is inflation. I don't think that the equity market is getting more valuable. It's that the dollars that we use to buy equities are losing value. I mean, look at gold prices were up big today. You know, this is not about the stock market going up. It isn't going up. That's an illusion created by the Fed. Our money is losing value. That's why oil prices are rising. And the fact is our money is going to lose a lot more value because the Federal Reserve refuses to allow the economy to restructure, and it refuses to acknowledge its culpability in both inflating the stock market bubble and then inflating the larger real estate bubble and now inflating a bigger bubble in the bond market and government spending. The Fed is the biggest enemy of this economy. In fact, Ben Bernanke, as far as I'm concerned, he's public enemy number one. He is helping
our lack of respect and our loss of liberty and lack of concern and defense of our republic. And we're suffering the consequences. This is what we're talking about. How can we reverse this trend? I think we have to understand how it happened, what the problems were, and what we have to aim for. But we've had a lot of problems because of this. Number one, economic problems, because they do not understand the Constitution and economics on monetary. I mean, it is very clear what we should be doing. The founders knew and understood something about inflation. The runaway inflation of the continental dollar was devastating to the economy, so they were explicit. They said no emitting of bills of credit, no printing money, no paper money, and that only gold and silver should be legal tender.
Thank you.